Okay, I'm going to call this meeting of the San Luis Obispo County Planning Commission to order with apologies for the late start date. Apparently our technical difficulties have escalated. And so unfortunately we are not currently either web streaming or going out over the television airwaves, but we are at least getting an audio and video recording of the meeting as well as a little feedback from the microphones. So we will have recordings of this proceeding, and if they can get the difficulties worked out this morning, we'll miraculously go online, but we don't need to hold our breath for that because it looks like that's a less than tangible goal for this morning. So with that, I'm going to ask the clerk to call the roll.
Commissioner Christensen?
Here.
Commissioner Wyatt?
Here.
Commissioner Melskow?
Here.
Commissioner Wyatt?
Here.
Chairperson Christie?
Here. Please rise for the flag salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, the first item this morning, as always, is public comment. This is the opportunity for members of the public to comment on items that are not on the agenda. And I have two speakers for public comment this morning. The first is Eric Greening, and the second is Michael Wynn. And Mr. Greening, you have 3 minutes.
Thank you. Good morning. I am Eric Greening, and I would like to thank staff for making room on the bus for a non-driver such as myself for the very informative, eye-opening tour of various sites connected with the Los Osos Wastewater Project. As a member of the Water Resources Advisory Committee, which is also taking this on, I certainly learned a lot that I will find helpful in terms of the RACS process, and I'm sure you learned a lot that will be helpful in terms of your process. I am hoping that you can early in the day clarify what is or is not happening with the Acceleron project so that people know whether there will be something of substance to come to town and address, or what the process will be, whether it will be simply ignored or heard and continued or something in between those 2 points. And then the other issue I wanted to bring up is smart growth or strategic growth. The Board of Supervisors had their first hearing on a packet that included your recommendations and then some staff recommendations that were essentially a rewriting of your recommendations for some achieving some compression, but I think most of the important substance of your recommendations showed up in their recommendations. The issues are being continued. It seemed that they were getting a generally favorable reaction, but that there may be some tweaking of language one way or another here and there. It would probably be useful to have at least one member of your commission at future board hearings so that the intent of your board, one of the members that was actually present for your process on that, which was quite extensive, 6 or 7 hearings, so that the meaning of the Planning Commission, the intention of the Planning Commission, can be understood as the language gets tweaked here and there in different ways. My understanding is that this could involve both April 14th and April 28th, but perhaps staff can clarify that during planning staff updates. Anyway, I think all of the work you have done on the subject deserves to not be lost, and probably most of it won't be. Most of it will be preserved or enhanced in some form, but the closer you can be to the process, the more likely that is. So, again, thank you, and thanks to staff for room on the bus to see all those amazing sights in Los Osos. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Greening. Our next speaker is Michael Wynn. Welcome, Mr. Wynn. You have 3 minutes.
Good morning, Madam Chair and Commissioners. My name is Mike Wynn, and I'm doing well on site and would do it that way. That's not the way your planning department would do things if you had oversight. And that certainly is not the way the PUC would allow things done if they had oversight. So this raises the problem, which continues countywide, certainly in our area. By the way, that water company told us that one of their wells has collapsed. One of them has been has such high nitrates that they can't drink it. They're down to one well. For these reasons, I urge you to be sensitive to this same process coming up. The good thing that happened is that the supervisors did request as a condition for denial of the appeal that they meter the water on that well. And so we will finally have some data as to how much water these take. It was a good system. It recycles 80% of the water. I don't have a problem with that. But to have no information is a problem. They will be reporting back to the Environmental Health Department here annually. There will be a hazmat operation that takes the filtrate away and disposes of it responsibly. Good things happened in that hearing. But I would urge you, as you think, as you have projects that have approval being asked from municipal water companies, that you also ask that they meter the wells, or at least they meter their system, and that they make an annual report, not only how much water did they pump, but what was their fee structure? Do they actually have a conservation tiered rate, or is it just a flat commodity rate? Because we do need to get some sort of idea as to what's going on. And so far, we're in the dark. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wynn. Before you leave the podium, I just want to be very clear on what your request was, because obviously we don't have jurisdiction over the mutual water companies themselves. Are you saying, just to be clear, when we approve projects that will be served by water companies, that we, as a condition of the land use permit, require the monitoring and the reporting? Is that your suggestion?
That's what I'm asking.
Okay. Thank you very much. That concludes public comment for items that are not on the agenda, and the next item on our agenda is planning staff updates. Mr. Hogue?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Warren Hogue from the Department of Planning and Building. The first thing I wanted to tell you is that we have prepared, based on your comments at your retreat on March 12th, a revised draft streamlining letter. We've also prepared changes that you directed on the rules procedures for the Planning Commission, and we will bring those back on May 14th. They will be on your agenda for you to ratify at that time. What that means, realistically, is that the revised start time that we discussed as part of the rules of procedure will not start until after you take that action. The reality is, with these technical difficulties, it seems like we don't start by 9 o'clock anyway, but hopefully that won't continue.
Unless I'm late, I want to know. Then we start
hopefully
right on
that won't continue.
Mr. Hogue, thank you for that. And I just you mentioned that those letters are actually written in draft form now, and if you could circulate those to commissioners, just if there's any last-minute tweaks, we can get those taken care of before
okay.
we bring them forward.
May I ask a question for clarification? You're talking about the streamlining letter. You
yes.
You want that in advance.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank
I'll
you.
Distribute that to all of the commission
Thank
ahead
you.
Of time. And then the next thing I wanted to mention was your commission will recall that you had a hearing scheduled on a planning appeal of a planning director determination for an applicant named Charette about a number of chickens being kept on a property on the Napomo Mesa. That was continued. I forget the date you originally considered, but I think it was in February or maybe late January. And it was continued to June 11th, but staff came to you a few meetings ago saying we were concerned that it was an outstanding enforcement case and we wanted to bring it up sooner. We were going to renotice it for April 9th, and we discussed that at a prior meeting during staff updates. Well, as it turns out, we're going to go back to June 11th. The applicant is not available on April 9th, and we decided that we should just go back to the original continuance date because there might be some confusion out there in the public about what date it's really going to be considered. We're going to renotice it for June 11th. So I just wanted to make sure your commission was in the loop because it's been a moving target. So that's what I had for staff updates. I was going to turn it over to Ellen Carroll to talk about the Acceleron project.
Thank you. The Acceleron project is item number 4 on your agenda today, and we did receive a letter from the applicant withdrawing that application. So then we would be recommending that the commission just withdraw that item from the agenda today.
Well, as I understand the process, they have withdrawn the project.
They have
so
withdrawn
it is no
the
longer
project.
Before us.
Right.
And so there's really no action for us to take other than to announce that the item
is not
withdrawn
on the commission's agenda.
What was compelling the process to go forward despite the request for continuance from the applicant? Is that your understanding of
that,
the process?
That's correct.
Okay. And so now what's going to happen is they're going to, they have the option, and they have indicated that they are going to essentially resubmit the same or a revised project that's going to then go through the EIR process.
Well, they could submit a new project, and then again, we would start from the beginning, really, and review that project. There would be an environmental determination on that environmental document, and then when that's completed, then it would come back to the commission.
You know, I think this is a great time to revisit another idea that was brought up at the retreat by Commissioner Christensen about the way we deal with EIRs as a planning commission. And we didn't actually take any action. I don't think there's an action to take. It's just a procedural question. But we all sort of left that retreat thinking about how we were going to process EIRs and starting with holding scoping meetings before the Planning Commission. I'm wondering if this might be the test case or the guinea pig for conducting EIR reviews in that way. Do you have any comments, Commissioner Christensen?
Well, as you recall, I did suggest that as an approach for some of these more involved issues, that besides having a scoping meeting in the location or near the location where the project would take place, I think what we did is ask staff to just consider that as an idea, and they haven't had a whole lot of time to consider that. So I'm not sure I'm willing to just say, yeah, let's start doing it that way. But I think it's something that we have asked staff to think about, that the Planning Commission might take one of the hearings in terms of scoping might be in front of the Planning Commission. And then the other idea would be that that one of the public hearings as part of the draft EIR review process would also be in front of the Planning Commission. And what that allows is allows for the applicant and for the public and for staff and for the commission to hear some of these about some of these items ahead of time, get a little bit more familiar with them, and it helps the applicant and everyone else focus a little bit earlier on where the issues do arise, and you get a little bit more... Well, you could get a little bit more thoughtful or thorough look at this stuff instead of, at least for the commission, hearing it during the actual consideration of the final EIR. So again, I think it's a big change from the way the county has traditionally done it, but it was done at the City Planning Commission level, and I thought it would be a good thing for them to just explore as an option for at least some of our items. So that was.
Do other commissioners have any thoughts on that topic? Because it seems like we're sort of at a decision juncture here, and it would be good to give staff feedback if commissioners have any thoughts on that.
Well, it certainly sounds like a good idea to help us get caught up a lot quicker on the project, so I would yield to staff to see if they have any concerns about that.
Commissioner Wyatt, did you have any?
Oh, yes, agreed. Okay. I thought it seemed like a good idea. I think there are some sort of locational issues that usually the scoping sessions are held near the location of the project. So I'm not sure how we would handle that countywide. That would be less of an issue in the city, but whether that adds an extra scoping session that could be here in addition to the one nearer to the site. But it would make sense to bring the commission in more at the beginning of the project than at the end.
In my understanding, it would be in addition to a local scoping hearing. It gives the commission the opportunity to add formal input in addition to giving the directly affected communities the opportunity to provide it. Mr. McNulty, do you see any issues here that you want to weigh in on?
Thanks. I'm Tim McNulty with the County Council's office. I think the first thing is, obviously, we don't have anything but staff direction that can be given today. We don't have this on your agenda,
sure.
So you can't take an action with regard to it. You can direct your staff if you want them to pursue something and bring it back. The other thing that occurs to me is that I would be careful, given that the Planning Commission is often sitting as a quasi-adjudicatory body on these permit decisions. If you're going to have preliminary hearings before all the evidence is ready, and it sounds like that would be the case if you were to get involved in scoping, that you need to be awfully careful not to take a position on the project itself or its merits during those hearings, because you'd find yourself becoming biased about whether or not it should be granted or not.
Sure.
So we'd have to be awfully careful about the way we conducted those hearings, I think.
And I would imagine County Council would be in attendance for a scoping hearing that...
Yeah, but I don't have a hook, so...
We can get you one. Well, I think we're hearing sort of a general consensus. I don't know if staff wants to respond or...
Just a couple of comments. We did discuss this at your retreat a couple of weeks ago, and the commission did ask us to look into this. And so we will do that for you and bring back some recommendations for you.
And I'm probably touching base with the San Luis City Planning Department would be a good thing, since they're doing this already. Okay, well, that item now has been withdrawn.
Which has now been withdrawn. I would like to make some comments on the project. Our primary concern in the Wasna Valley was our fresh water supply. We hired a hydrologist, Robert Curry, to do a report on that, and in his report he concluded, ultimately the oily water from the oil wells will seek passage to the surface. It is a matter of time, with potential deleterious effects on shallow water supply aquifers not realized for perhaps a decade or more. Given this information, we have grave concerns about the existing wells in the Wasna Valley, which were left uncapped and unabandoned by the previous operator, who we recently found out was in fact a partner with Acceleron LLC, the applicant on this project. In light of the irresponsible actions of the past operator and the threat of pollution to our fresh water supply due to their actions, the Wasna Valley Association would like to request that the county temporarily put a lien on any and all of Acceleron LLC's mineral rights, subject to full remediation of the Lavoie-Hadley well sites and abandonment of the wells. This would correct the existing violations of the conditional use permit, which was issued by this county in 1980 for those well sites. That conditional use permit was assigned on June 6, 2007 to Acceleron LLC by the previous operator, who, as we now understand, is their 50% partner. In addition, we request that the county put in place a moratorium on any and all oil development of the entire field in the area of Wasna Valley and Tar Springs while the county works with state and federal agencies to ensure that all existing wells have been properly abandoned and all existing well sites have been fully remediated and our freshwater supply has been fully protected. We have the question, does the county have any enforcement action on the abandoned wells? And in addition, can the property owner of the, not the mineral rights owner, but the property surface right owner, be held liable in any way for the existing violations of that conditional use permit? And I would also like to thank the greater community that has supported us in this effort, ECOSLO, Los Padres Forest Watch, the City of Arroyo Grande, South County Advisory Council, and Napomo CSD. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Skinner. Our next speaker is Doug Timewell, followed by Tracy Del Rio, and Ms. Del Rio is our last speaker on this item. Oh, Mr. Wynn, I'll use your previous speaker slip. Welcome.
Good morning.
Mr. Timewell, you have 3 minutes.
I'm Doug Timewell, and I'm the operator of a small vineyard and winery called Toucan Wines off of Wasna. And I wanted to say a couple of things. One is relevant to the scoping discussion that was happening earlier. We would appreciate that early public comment on those issues, too, to be included. So we're excited about the possibility or the prospect of those changes. The Wasna Valley Association's future will include a continued organization to maintain the sustainability of the Wasna Valley and the surrounding area. We're planning to create an advisory council and propose land use designation changes to help protect our pristine environment and community. Another point I'd like to make is that the applicant's application and the subsequent withdrawal has cost our county a lot of money. My concern, county planning has spent well over a year, maybe it's been 2 years, focused on this project. Mr. McKenzie, probably full-time for a year. This is a very expensive proposition to be withdrawn and then resubmitted. And I just ask that we look very carefully at these projects and the cost of processing these applications to the extent that we have. And thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Timewell. Tracy Del Rio, followed by Mike Wynn.
Hello. My name is Tracy Del Rio, and I am a resident of Wasna Valley, 6150 Wasna Townsite Road, and I'm a member of Wasna Valley Association. And I just, there's so many things that I'd like to say, but I just want to thank the community out in Wasna because we had a meeting last night preparing for coming here and voicing our, you know, one vote, one voice kind of thing. And it's a changed plan today, but I appreciate all the people in Wasna Valley that took time and energy and money out of their daily lives to oppose a project that, from our perspective, Wasna Valley Association has had many problems from the beginning, and then the latest goes into future plans for our community and our county, because I think that we're all blessed to be able to live in a place like San Luis Obispo County and not have to combat foreign companies coming in a wolf in sheep's clothing, excuse the metaphor, and then having the property owners of Wasna Valley take some responsibility for leaving their property the way it was over 20 years, because now we have to go back and find out if our water is polluted or not because of the irresponsibility of the applicant in the late 80s. So anyway, that's my talk. So thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Del Rio. And our last speaker is Mike Wynn.
Thank you. My name is Mike Wynn. I want to make just three comments about this project very quickly. First, I do want to commend Ms. Carroll and the environmental health people for looking at it carefully and for their recommendation that an EIR be conducted. I think that's highly appropriate, and we're very appreciative. Secondly, I want to make it clear that the Napomo Community Service District has not taken a position on this project at all. We watch it carefully. We always have our concerns, but we are not for or against it. We're simply paying attention. Third, I would ask that when this project comes back, assuming that it does, that we be careful to require a programmatic EIR. The four wells that were talked about this time are a small fraction of the total number of potential wells on sites that the applicant either owns or has leased. And so it would be important not to look at just the beginning footprint, but look at the entire potential in that effort. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wynn. Unfortunately, as I mentioned at the beginning of this meeting, this is not being broadcast over the airwaves. And so I'm hoping that the folks who are here today who know that this item has been withdrawn are going to be able to contact folks who might not know the item has been withdrawn, and we're planning on coming in this afternoon, because it would be really unfortunate to have them drive all the way in only to find that there's no point in them coming down here. With that, I too want to thank staff for bringing this forward to this current resolution. I know it's been frustrating for the applicant to first be moving ahead with a neg deck and then having to prepare an EIR, but process frustrations aside, I also want to note that, in my opinion, this is an example of how the process works, i.e. in a laborious way, in that the notice went out, the public got involved, they got very engaged, they brought new information forward that staff wasn't aware of that, you know, changed the situation, and I think ultimately what we're going to get at the end of the day is a better process, and certainly a better decision-making process, and ultimately a better outcome. So, again, thanks to all the members of the community and the staff who put energy into this, and we'll be seeing it at a later date in a different forum. Any other comments from commissioners? Commissioner Wyatt?
Yes, I just also wanted to chime in on another subject. Wanted to thank staff as well for our tour, add to Mr. Greening's comment that the tour of Los Osos last week, Friday, was very helpful. So wanted to thank Carrie Brown and Mark Hutchison and Paavo Ogren and all the other staff members who coordinated on that. I think we all appreciated being out there on site and hearing answers to questions together. So thanks for all the work on that.
We did have some specific questions of staff. I think it was from Mr. Skinner. The question about the county placing a lien on the mineral rights subject to remediation, the question of a moratorium on oil development until the site's been remediated, and the question of whether or not there's any enforcement action currently pending against this item. I don't know if staff is in a position to answer those questions now, or...
We don't have specific answers to those questions, but I will tell you that we're reviewing the violation issues and will be determining how best to move on those. And I took notes and we will look into the suggestions. But we're really kind of in the research phase now of what's the best way to deal with those violations.
Yeah. And if nothing else comes of this other than Wasna Valley forming its own community advisory council, then I think democracy has been advanced at least one small step, and staff can communicate with the community out there through the advisory council process, which I think will make everything clearer for everyone. If there are no further responses or comments to public comment, let's move on to our consent agenda. We have some...
Continued hearing to consider a request by Nancy Bright for a variance coastal development permit. County file number DRC 2007-00144. Supervisorial District Number 2, Paul Sittig, Project Manager.
Good morning, Madam Chair, Commissioners. Paul Sittig, County Planning. Before you have a variance to develop on a hillside lot in Cayucas, and we'll continue with this. The project is proposed. It's a three-story structure, the bottom story being a garage that is partially built within the hillside, second and third stories being living space, both stories including decks, total deck size being 228 square feet, total height being measured from average natural grade of 15 feet. The average sloping area for the proposed building area is 37%, and the total lot coverage is 26% of, 3,125 square feet. The maximum allowed lot coverage is 50% in this area. So they're well within that limitation. Located on Richard Avenue, north of Stewart Avenue, on the north side of the hill, in the residential single-family land use category, as seen above, backing up onto the edge of the urban reserve line. The lot itself is 25 feet wide by 125 feet long. It's currently undeveloped. To the north is a residence, to south, undeveloped lots. Here the project is proposed, noting the extent of the undeveloped lot behind, or the area should not to be disturbed beyond the property or the residence, and noting how the residence is designed into the hillside itself. Oops, previous slide here. This is the property line, as indicated with my cursor. That is the front of the building, or front of the property line, so there's 10 feet setback in the front. An additional 6-foot setback on the third story deck area. An average natural grade measurement of height, 15 feet here, approximately. Next, we'll see some elevations detailing further the design of the project. Note that the railings themselves decks will be enclosed with glass. And the project is conditioned to never enclose these areas to be an enclosed living space. So they will always be decks and will not expand the living space of the building. from the rear of the property appears to be a single-story structure, but from the south, or from the, sorry, the street side along Orchard Avenue, you'll see fully the garage and two living stories. Footprints. Given the size of the lot and the required setbacks of 3 feet per side, the living space is limited to 19 feet widthwise, limiting the options for major articulation of the building itself. This existing site, the dotted lines represent approximately where the building will be. Note this is just my approximation and not provided by the applicant, but based on what I've seen in the site. This is looking at the existing residence as seen previously on the aerial photo. And looking then to the south, you'll see some residences in the distance. Again, noting the dotted line that is the approximate location of the residence. And also site disturbance for the driveway itself. With this, this project doesn't need a variance. Variance is required because of the steeply sloping lot. Development on slopes of an exceeding 30%. Special circumstances is that the entirety of the lot is indeed sloping. The area surrounding this lot is also steeply sloping, so this is not a special situation, not a unique. This is allowable as it is a single-family residence and a residential single-family lot. No adverse impacts due to the design of the project and reports provided. And this project is consistent with the county general plan. It's compatible infill to an area designed to minimize risks and impacts. With that, staff recommends adoption of a negative declaration in accordance with the applicable provisions of the California Environmental Quality Act, Public Resources Code Section 21,000, etc. Approved variance, DRC 2007-00144, based on the findings listed in Exhibit A and conditions listed in Exhibit B. And now available for questions and comments.
Thank you. Commissioner Wyatt, questions for staff?
Yes, a couple of questions. On page 37 of the staff report, just looks like it's noted no increase in parks demand and no Quimby fees required. I was just curious. Insignificant, so.
Yeah, Quimby fees are for subdivisions.
That's just subdivisions.
So this is a currently subdivided lot, legal lot, things of that sort.
Okay, so the parks fee is mixed into the general public facilities and covered. Okay, and same then for roads fees.
This is not in a road fee area at all. All of Cayucas is not in a road fee area. There's North County fee area, which encompasses Cambria, and then the South Coastal, which is the Los Osos and Baywood Park area, but nothing in Cambria.
Nothing there in Cayucas. Well, it is ironic because that road on the drive-by today, that road is falling down the hill a bit.
Richard Avenue.
There's some irony there the residents will get, yeah. Okay, well, I wanted to check on that then.
You know, it just brings up an interesting point, though. Everybody that builds a house uses roads. It seems like the whole county should be a road fee area.
That's an interesting idea, and I think Public Works would love that. I don't think we could do that politically, but
I believe it's covered in taxes in some degree, and also with gas taxes, things of that sort, but that's my understanding.
Yeah.
Well, except we know that property taxes do not cover the cost of government services. They just don't, and less and less so.
Public Works is looking for creative ways to try and encompass to do something with the road fee areas because inherently they don't work. We can never keep up with the projects that are identified in circulation studies for the different areas.
I would encourage Public Works to think expansively on that topic.
Thank you.
Excuse me, Commissioner Wyatt.
That'll make the applicants happy, yeah. No, those questions, so those are covered. I also had some questions about the advisory council points in the letter. They raised several, but I see the Carnegies are here, so I'm guessing they'll speak to those.
I could also speak to that point. This was brought back to the land use committee of the Cayucas Citizens Advisory Council. Project was re-reviewed, and previous plans were unclear to some degree on setbacks, some limitations of the building itself. The design itself has not changed dramatically from the beginning. Initial design was closer to the road. The design was pushed back to meet front setbacks. But as noted in the presentation, it meets the heights limitation, the setbacks from sides. Drainage is discussed in graphics in very, very small print, unfortunately. But that's dealt with through Public Works, through the building review phase. So I believe that's the majority of it, but the Carnegies could expand upon this for.
Okay, we'll hear from them then before I ask more. Thank you.
Other questions? Commissioners?
I have a few questions, and they speak to the practicality of building on the site with some of the conditions, so maybe I should wait until we hear public comment.
It's up to you. If there are clarifications you'd like from staff, then now's the time to ask them, but if it's discussion, we can wait till later.
Well, it may roll into a further discussion that I could do later, but I will ask the question then. On page 113-21, we have a condition about, talks about the project or that the construction of the project are parked off the street right away and do not block access to any driveways of residents. It brings up the question of right away, and it looks like the toe of the existing slope is beyond the existing right of way. If you go to your aerial photo or your aerial image that you showed us earlier,
if they're referring to the aerial photo with the actual picture of the ground underlaid, though the graphic is malleable, I'll say, so it's not a solid definition of what's on the ground. Those lines can be shifted around. It's a good representation, but this should not be used for surveying or for a reflection of what property lines are and what various setbacks are.
Okay. I visited the site last weekend, and one of my concerns was how in the heck are you going to build this with this condition? I don't know if it would make it impractical or impossible to build the project with that condition the way written, because the right-of-way extends into the toe of the slope quite a ways from your aerial image, and you can't see it very well, but on page 117, we have an exhibit that shows a 25-foot, I believe, right-of-way. I mean, my eyes can't even hardly pick this one up, so, and I think you showed us the same image, but it appears that that's a 25-foot right-of-way. And the existing roadway looks a lot narrower than the 25 feet. Right. So the point being, if the construction vehicles have to park beyond the right-of-way, rather than maybe it should be worded the existing roadway, my concern is I don't know how they're going to build this site or get concrete or block delivered or anything.
Hovercraft.
It would take something like that. You'd have to get the Egyptians back to figure this one out. But my concern being maybe it's premature to try to rewrite a condition until we hear public comment, but my concern back to that condition would be maybe something refer parked as not to block access to the neighbor's driveways rather than completely out of the right-of-way.
So you could strike it, strike from right-of-way, strike right-of-way. Yeah, I think just strike right-of-way, and that would be sufficient, I believe.
Had a little bit of time to do that.
Sure. And just to follow up while we're all thinking on that point, it looks like this is going to be built with masonry block and there'll be a lot of deliveries of big amounts of block and concrete. So there will be some interim times where the concrete trucks and the big block delivery trucks will be blocking the neighbor's driveway. So, maybe a condition so that the applicant arranges those times with the neighbors.
They do have a condition.
Driveways.
I'm sorry. They do have a condition 26 that requires not condition 26. There is a condition which requires an encroachment permit, condition 10 on page 1-10. And during the encroachment permit process, we can give them a traffic control plan so that they can do their work out in the street, as long as they're not blocking, as long as they're providing thoroughfare for all the residents.
Sure, and I believe there's a sewer tie-in and things of that nature in the street also, so.
Is that the extent of your questions?
I believe so, yes.
Commissioner Melchko, any questions?
No, I'm okay.
Christensen? I had a couple quickies. This is in the coastal zone, correct?
Correct.
There's no mention in the recommended action of a approval of a coastal development permit. So, is it a development plan in the coastal zone?
I was, and it may be a mission on my behalf.
Because the next item is also in the coastal zone,
mm-hmm.
And I believe there was mention, that hearing to consider a request for a development plan, coastal development permit, and there's no mention of that in this, so we might want to amend the wording there.
Yes, it includes coastal development permit.
Okay. And then there was a reference in the staff report to a conditional will serve letter from the water district and a letter from the fire authority, but I didn't actually see copies of the letters in there, and I was wondering what the conditions were on the will serve letter.
Both of those were very plain letters. One of them was saying that you have water, that you are allowed water. There was no conditions placed on the water will serve. So I thought that was of no, it added nothing of value. Although it should have been added just to show that there was nothing of value. Fire was similar.
Okay, because on page 1-3, there's a reference to a conditional will serve letter has been issued.
That, again, may have been
by Cayuga CSA 10.
On my behalf.
Okay. Typically, those letters get included as part of the staff report, as part of the packet, so that we have an opportunity to see them. So in the future, I don't recall seeing you before the commission before, so welcome if this is your first time. In the future, those letters are helpful to have in the packet. And my third question goes to the height of the structure. It's referred to, it may be just my confusion, but it seems to be referred to variously throughout the document as 15 feet, 24 feet, and 28 feet.
There's a couple different height points of interest, I guess. If you look on the site plan view, which is one of the better ones to view this, the height itself is measured from the average natural grade, but the front faceplate is a new area standard, or newer area standard, limiting pretty much the giant, the effect of having a very large wall on the downslope side of something. Mm-hmm. So that's where you get the 22, 24, 28 foot limitations. 22 is the smallest for a less sloping lot. And this, so if you have a more sloping lot, then the tallest downslope face you can have is 24 feet before you jog back then another 6 feet. That was part of the jog back.
On page 1-2, you have the proposed height as 15 feet on the chart.
From average and natural grade, correct. I don't know if I clarified that there, but I should have.
And then it goes on to say that the front and rear building faces, as measured from finished grade, shall be 24 feet.
That's, again, referring to the building face, which is kind of a strange wording, but is wording carried over from the area plan standards. Again, referring to just the massing as viewed from the downslope side.
Okay.
So that's the reason that's from finished grade, because finished grade is what matters there, because if you measure from average natural grade, then you're somewhere in the middle of nothing,
right,
really.
Okay.
But if you're looking at it as it stands when it's all developed, you don't want to have a four-story building just staring down at you.
And so the finished height from finished grade is going to be?
I believe 24 feet, I believe. I think a maximum of 24 feet.
24 feet, okay. Okay, I think this is the time to go to members of the public. I have two speaker slips today. The first is Ed Carnegie, and the second is Mary Ann Carnegie. Welcome, Mr. Carnegie, and you have 3 minutes.
Good morning. My name is Ed Carnegie, and I live in Los Osos and Cayucos, right in the same area. So first I'd like to say that the Advisory Council and the Land Use Committee is in favorable of this project. They have worked well with the Brights, and they have made many modifications to meet our requirements. One thing that I did not see...
Carnegie, you have 3 minutes.
Hi, is that known as passing the buck? I'm Mary Ann Carnegie.
Yeah. You're probably used to that.
And I, too, live on Richard Avenue with my better half there. And as he mentioned, we did work very diligently with the Brights and with Paul Siddick to come to some good resolutions in bringing the design of the project to meet most of the concerns of the community, and especially us on Richard Avenue. And I appreciate what you said about the road right-of-way on the blocking. We do know they park on the road right-of-way, but the concern is we have had our entrances to our garages and the ability to get to our homes blocked many, many times without the courtesy of being notified that construction would be up there dropping off things. And we know that any construction, it does, but we've had construction up there for 7 years now on various projects, and so we've been, you know, having this as an ongoing. So it's getting a little tiring, and all we ask is a courtesy to be notified that the road would be blocked or that a delivery is being made in that. Regarding what Ed said, too, the one issue that was not brought out that I couldn't find on the report was the idea of the performance bond. And I know in hard economic times that places another burden on the builder, but it also guarantees that should they evacuate or vacate the building project for whatever reason, that we as a neighborhood are not burdened with an ugly sight of it not being returned as much as possible to its natural state, because we do have one up there now. We've got two or three properties. We have two actually in foreclosure, and they're not even finished with a final yet or anything. And so it's just a concern that we have, and as you all know, I think with the DeVoe project, the same thing. We're left with a site that's half built, half not. So we do ask that a performance bond could be placed on a steep hillside. The other question I had was on page 1-2 of the report, the staff report on that building face height and setback, that it is the 24 feet for the faceplate, and that is considered from the finished grade. But what we question is on the minor use permit, that the maximum height of a building, you got building face, is 28 feet, but it's from finished grade, and I've always been under the understanding that it's measured from your average natural grade, the actual finished height of a building at 28 feet. So that was a concern that I had, that it is from the average natural grade there. And the other thing is, I know we're approving this project. It is up for sale. The problem we had was for the consistency in the drawings, so that if it does sell, with the idea that it's more sellable because of it having plans and everything, that those plans do show consistency on the setbacks, the height, and everything, because if the Brights do sell it, then whoever takes over these plans, they'll be working with that set of plans, and the family members no longer available to answer the questions or concerns that might come up. I did like the idea of what Commissioner Christie said regarding the roads and such, because part of Richard Avenue, well, that whole area up there has been with being that we had to pay a certain amount, whoever was the first one in, paid to have it sent to the nearest county-maintained road. We've always said it should be like a school tax, that whoever bills, because they do use the entire length of a road, that maybe tax it according to whatever the square footage or your frontage footage of your road is, to give that as a taxable to cover everyone pays road. So thank you very much.
Ms. Carnegie, before you leave, just a clarification question here. Explain, please, your remaining question then about the height, the average natural grade or faceplate height of 28. I wasn't sure what your question there or lingering concern was.
In the staff report on page, well, it's like 1-2 on, I think that's it, where it gives the chart there, and it's on the planning area standards, and it says building face height and setback, the second to the last line. Underneath, it's underneath where you questioned the differences of the 28 feet, the 15 feet, that chart. And it says there that on a minor use permit is approved, the maximum height of building face is 28 feet as measured from finished grade. I've always understood it's from average natural grade, the 28 feet.
Well, could you refer to that? I'm sorry, looking for other conditions.
It's right here, this one here.
It's on page 1-2, underneath the chart, under the title Building Face Height and Setback. If you could answer on the mic, please, Mr.
Okay, my apologies. Getting clarification there. Building face height and setback. The point that was the text was called out there is referring to the actual language of the Astero area plan. So this is actually language copied directly from the Astero area plan, stating that if a minor use permit is approved, the maximum height is up to 28 feet as measured from finished grade. Again, going back to the building face itself, not the building height. For the whole entire structure
is what I'm hoping.
Right, yeah, because so, I saw that in the conditions too, but I'm still also couldn't read my small
copy
very well either, so I wasn't sure if that was incorporated or not, so maybe staff can address that remaining issue. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Carnegie. Okay. I am aware that we're about 8 minutes past our break time, but I do want to see if the applicant is here today. I didn't have a speaker slip. Is the applicant or the applicant's representative here today? And would you like to address the project, or are you just here to answer questions?
I'm just here to answer questions if you have any.
Okay, she wasn't on the mic, but she is here, and she's here to answer questions should we have any. What's the will of the commission at this point? You want to plow through this project, or would you like to take your break and come back and deliberate?
I'd like to keep going.
Okay.
If
that nobody seems to have any objection to that. So with no future, no additional members of the public that wish to speak on this item, I'm going to bring this back to the staff and commission for action. Any additional questions or points for staff? I guess we'll start with Mr. Marshall. Did you have a revised language?
I can read something in for on page 113, Glenn Marshall, County Public Works. On page 113, condition 21, I was hoping to, I'll just read in what I was hoping to change. Starting at the beginning, at all times during the construction phase, the owner shall ensure that all vehicles associated with the construction of the project are legally parked on the downslope side of Richard Avenue and do not block existing driveways or access to existing residents. And then goes on, music shall be kept at a volume so that it's not audible at the adjacent residents. One concern that I heard during testimony was having the contractors notifying the residents. And I'm not too sure how to exactly word that. I don't know if you wanted to give staff direction into coming up with something about that.
Were you going to strike or keep the language that says and do not block access to driveways or residences?
I was going to keep that. So I was going to reword the whole condition. Shall I read it into the record?
Read it again. Okay. Sounds like this.
The whole condition would read, this is condition 21, page 113. At all times during construction phase, the owner shall ensure that all vehicles associated with the construction of the project are legally parked on the downslope side of Richard Avenue and do not block existing driveways or access to existing residents.
Okay.
Music shall be kept at a volume so that it's not audible at adjacent residences. No domestic pets are allowed on the site at any time during construction. And that's condition 21 in its entirety.
Okay. So the question is whether or not to add some kind of notification. That seems sort of unworkable to me.
It did to me, too. Otherwise,
you know,
I would
call or write every member of the every resident on the street to say we're delivering cement.
And they don't really know when the trucks are going to show up. It'll be 10 or 11. So I kind of left that alone.
So how about do not unnecessarily block access? I mean, obviously, if you have to park your dump truck there for 5 minutes, you need to do that, but you shouldn't leave your pickup truck there all day long while you go have lunch in town. That would be the idea there. Just to add the word unnecessarily in front of
block. In front of, between not and block?
Yeah. And then I had another point on page 113. It was condition 22, and it says, if bonded for, landscaping shall be installed within 60 days after final building inspection. And my concern is there, it's sort of pointless to condition anything to happen after the final, because it's already been finaled, so who would ever know? So can we, I mean, there's an if there, if bonded for. So I guess that's a discussion we need to have about whether or not bonding is going to occur.
This is a standard condition that is kept on. I believe the bonding is there. With bonding, you're then able to have a third party install the landscaping. So that it would be, from my understanding of that, the third party who is hired or worked through the county would make sure that this is done within 60 days of final. So that if landscaping isn't installed, but it is bonded for by the applicant, that the county would then hire somebody or get some maintenance folk out there to install the landscaping.
Which seems like a lot more work and expense and hassle than just saying you got to install the landscaping before the final. I mean, if that's the intent, is to actually get the landscaping installed, maybe it's shorter distance between two points.
Jim Orton from County
mm-hmm.
Council. I would just add that if the bonding for option is utilized, there is a performance agreement that's executed that has a time for it to be completed. But whether or not you want to allow for that is up to your discretion.
Yeah. Well, I guess we need to have the bonding discussion because it was brought up by the advisory council.
Well, that was a separate issue of whether if the project was abandoned and site restoration, similar like we do with telecommunication sites, we have a condition for that. If you wanted to require bonding for that, I think you'd have to add a condition for site restoration in the event the project was abandoned, and then that would also have a bond.
So the bond for the landscaping would not be part of the bond
that,
for
that would
abandonment
be a separate
restoration.
Bond.
Okay. So
I can just put the landscaping in and not have to get the bond.
Okay.
It's landscaping shall be installed or bonded for prior to final.
I think this is a pretty typical condition, and
okay.
I think it's because of bad weather if they want to final and move in, but
right.
It's not
okay.
The opportune time
right.
to do the landscaping.
So it actually
okay.
gives them an extra option.
Okay.
If they choose not to take it, that's
okay, that's more clear. Thanks. That's, that takes care of my concern.
And then that gets us then to the bigger kind of performance bond question.
Right.
We all heard the DeVoe project recently.
Yeah.
And looked again at that site, and anybody who goes by there sees that still kind of in the waiting. And so it really kind of makes this particularly relevant, having that in close proximity to this site. So the request has been made that we would put a condition for some kind of performance bond for site restoration in here. So it seems like a good idea.
My only question on that is there would be a point where it becomes site restoration or completion. When I was on Richard Avenue, I believe I saw the houses that were referred to, and they're pretty far along. So I don't know if you'd want to demo them down and restore the site or complete the project and lean it and sell it or whatever the next steps might be.
Well, that might be wise wording then.
So it might be restoration or completion.
One or the other. If at some certain point, maybe council can help us.
Well, having the public go complete a private project is unusual. With the telecommunication sites, we have the condition that if the use is discontinued or the project is abandoned, that the site needs to be restored, and then that's bonded for. I would recommend an approach like that rather than completing a private project on a private site.
So as you read that, if use is continued or project is abandoned, then what?
There will be a bond posted to secure restoration of the site in the event the project is abandoned, or I think staff could pull up the language that we use on the telecommunications.
We're looking for that right now.
Okay,
so
okay. Well, they look what about, is there a consensus or a majority that would be an addition that we would
I'm curious to as to what the cost of that is. What? How does that work?
Yeah, I don't know what the cost is, but we do have a pretty unusual economic situation here, and I hope that most people kind of at this point either, you know, have their funding and their plans going forward with the knowledge of what's happening economically. In other words, we're not getting people with construction loans that don't make any sense anymore. So, and I kind of have a problem with the idea, yeah, you got a half-built house and something happens and then what do you do, tear it down? And I don't really feel the need for something like this. I feel like I'm not real super familiar with what's going on here, and I don't know how much the cost is, so I'm kind of
What is the cost? Does anybody know the answer to that question?
I can speak in Glen Marshall County Public Works. I can speak in terms of public works projects. We would buy, in this case, I would be looking for an estimate from an architect for demolition of a structure, and then grading at $31 a cubic yard, and then site restoration or revegetation and planting. So it would be someone have to give planning a cost estimate, and they would approve it, and they could use Public Works to help them.
And then let's just pick a number. Let's say it's $200,000.
Okay.
Do they have to actually come up with $200,000 and put it in an escrow account, or do they put some percentage of that in an escrow account, or how does that work?
Bond.
Are you talking about the bond?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There'd need to be a surety bond or a letter of credit or a certificate of deposit or cash deposited.
But
typically,
so what the actual cost of the bond wouldn't be the estimate for the job. So the question is if somebody would have idea what that would be.
Typically what happens is that staff would approve an amount of the bond that would be required for site restoration. And in the what we do with the telecommunication sites, there's a surety bond that's posted. But they also have the option of posting a letter of credit from a bank or savings loan.
So a letter of credit doesn't cost them anything. They just, if they have the credit to cover it, it's no cost to the
Well, asset. I think it's typically 1% or so that they have to pay for it. If it's a small project, I've frequently seen individual certificates of deposits that are assigned to the county to secure it, or cash deposit.
With our
curb gutter and sidewalk agreements, we have cash deposits or CDs.
A cash deposit in the full amount?
A cash deposit and the amount that staff would estimate would be required to restore the site to its original condition. And, of course, depending upon what's being put there, the DeVoe project, it could be the matter, and if not, we'd have to hire somebody to do it.
Thoughts?
I've actually been through all this process, and I don't know if the county's ever called in a bond and used it. I don't think they could probably cite a case where it's ever been done.
We have for subdivisions, and it's very, very difficult. We don't like doing it. I don't know about building department if they've ever had
I can't recall with a building department. I know that we've had some with our surety bonds, we have typically are posted for site restoration for all the telecommunication sites. But we've never had to collect on a bond with a performance agreement. We have gone against a couple times letter of credits with banks, and then we have a couple of instances with surety companies with subdivisions.
So, Commissioner White, is the gist of your observation that these bonds work as a really effective incentive to get people to finish their projects, or is the gist of your comment there's no point in doing it because the county never uses them anyway?
Well, it depends on the economic viability of the applicant. And what we have out in our community now was a lot of what they call these hard money loans, and it's not just unique to this Richardson Avenue. It's all throughout our whole state and county. Right. I think I read in the paper San Luis Obispo County is unique, that we have more than most in our state. But there's these abandoned projects all over all the cities and all the county. And what's happening now is a lot of individual investors are trying to group and go in and clean these things up. So I don't know the situation on Richardson Avenue, but if it's a bank, normally they'll step up and, you know, a traditional, conventional bank, they'll step up and finish these projects. But it's the hard money that we read about in the paper. There's some folks in jail right now waiting for rain.
Yeah.
And that's the situation with a lot of these that are left for a period of time. It's a very cumbersome process. I'm an investor on some of these things, so I have some firsthand knowledge. But it's a very cumbersome process to even get control of the property. It takes an extensive amount of time. So
even with a bond in place?
Even with anything in place, because there's no validity behind the bond if it's a hard money lender and they're in jail, and and also the financial strength of the borrowers, a lot of them walk away and abandon, and so file bankruptcy. So it takes some time to gather control of the properties, then refinance and complete properties, and that's being done, but it's taking a couple of years. So what's typically happened? I ask it in our retreat. I don't know if anyone picked up on the question that I asked, but it was if the building department's giving extensions on the building permit expirations because of this very issue. And I know the city of Paso Robles gave a two-year extension for this reason, not just the abandoned properties, but the decline in the overall economy and the real estate market, to give folks that were caught up in partway in the process a couple of years to get back on track.
So is it your sense, given your experience and where we are in the economy today, that requiring a bond on this project would be a prudent thing to do to protect the public interest? Or is your sense that, given all of those factors, it would be a burdensome ball and chain that would decrease the likelihood that the project would go forward?
My sense is, it was touched upon a little bit earlier here, is that we're in a very unique time. And that I don't know if anybody that, I suppose if they went out and they had some cash and they wanted to start building a project, it could get, and they ran out of cash, they could end up abandoning the project. But I don't know a lender that would make a loan that wouldn't monitor the money a lot more prudently than it's been monitored in the past by a lot of these lenders.
I'm deferring to your expertise. Do you think a bond would be a good thing or a bad thing?
I don't think it would be a good thing.
Okay.
I have some language in the event you want to require posting of the bond. It would be prior to the issuance of a construction permit, the applicant shall post a bond to secure restoration of the site to its original condition in the event the project is abandoned. And then procedurally, what would happen to implement that, there would be a performance agreement entered into with the planning department, which would have a bond to secure that.
I could probably support something like that if we added some additional language that says if the project is abandoned prior to the structure being in the construction world, it's called weathered in, to a point where the building will not deteriorate. In other words, if it's far enough along where the weather's not going to deteriorate it, then that bond can be released back.
How do others feel about that?
I don't think I'm into this thing.
It's a tough
one. Very inelegant way of putting it. Process for a long time near this one, but I think maybe we can look at that as the exception and not a necessary reason to add this in. So with that, I had a question for staff then about the consistency in the drawings issue that Ms. Carnegie raised. Will you speak to that a bit?
Yes, that is something that was dealt with in some degree in the presentation graphics, but those weren't the most easy to understand on the small screens you have there.
Right.
So with that, I have indeed added conditions as part of the fifth condition, page 1-9 of site development, requiring that accurate setbacks and delineations of height and measurements be included on plans.
And what condition are you seeking to add there?
Site development, number 5.
So you're adding a small B?
It's already in there. A, B, and C should already exist. If not...
So you're not proposing to add anything?
No, I'm just highlighting what exists.
That's already there? Okay.
Okay, so let's see. So looking at that...
Accurate 10-foot front setback on all applicable plans. Clearly delineated height of faceplate from the building face along Richard Avenue. High and low points of the building on existing grade, including a marker of the average natural grade for accurate height assessment. Those all just currently in the conditions following the discussion that was had with the land use committee.
Okay, and would it be helpful there to add to B, for example, because the faceplate seems to come up then from the Richard side. You have clearly detailed height of the faceplate of the building. Would it be useful to add, you know, with the 24-foot to the first deck, with less than, equal to, or less than 24 feet? And
that is number 3, actually, the approved development, maximum front, Richard Avenue faceplate.
Okay, that's clearly spelled out right there, too. Okay, got it. Thanks.
Kind of jumping around, but it's all there.
Okay, thank you. So that's handling those issues.
While we're on that, was that it for you, Commissioner White? While we're on that page, my last question or suggestion was, in my notes, I had suggested adding under approved development a new condition 4 in response to the advisory council letter that the decks shall not be enclosed. But staff mentioned that the project was already conditioned to meet that request. I didn't see that condition, so maybe staff can point us to where that is already included. It is already included as a condition.
Right.
Okay, well, if you guys saw it and I missed
out.
It, then that's fine. We don't need to add it.
It's actually for the life of the project at the end of the list of things. Somewhere towards the end.
Okay, that's fine. If you guys saw it and I missed it, that's fine. Any other comments, questions, additions, deletions?
We have the issue of the coastal development permit issue. How did you want to
That's
going
to that's going to be in the motion. We're going to
right.
add
Are
that
we
to
just
the
calling this approving coastal a variance to coastal development permit?
It's assigned the same number. Is that correct, Mr. Robeson? Okay.
So
from a legal standpoint, a variance is equivalent to a coastal development permit, but procedurally, staff usually calls it variance/coastal development
right.
permit.
Yeah, and it was because I didn't see that I thought maybe we had omitted something.
Okay, so it's just a matter of adding that into the motion is all then.
Variance/coastal development permit, DRC, blah, blah, blah.
So that will be added on your first page, page 1-1, and then also on page 1-9, the approved development condition.
1-9... Condition
the first
number. Oh, there it is, first
That's
sentence.
Right.
Okay.
Anything else anybody had wanted to bring up on this? With that, I will move that we adopt the negative declaration in accordance with the applicable provisions of CEQA, and we approve variance coastal development permit DRC 00144, based on the findings listed in Exhibit A and conditions listed in Exhibit B, with changes to condition number 21 as read by staff.
And condition number 1.
Condition number 1 was
just to add conditional or coastal development permit.
Okay, adding coastal development permit to condition one as well. Yes.
And number five, didn't staff add?
Staff just read number five,
but didn't make changes to it.
I'll second.
Okay, it's been moved by Commissioner Wyatt and seconded by Commissioner White. Any additional discussion? Clerk, please call the roll.
Commissioner Wyatt?
Yes.
Commissioner Wyatt?
Yes.
Commissioner Christensen?
Yes.
Commissioner Milstow?
Yes.
Chairperson Christie?
Yes. The project is approved. And before we go on to our second item, I think it's time to take our belated morning break. It's now 10:32. Let's return at 11:05. I'm so bad with math. What's 15 minutes?
Just say quarter to.
Quarter to has been withdrawn and will not be heard this afternoon. With that, we're on to our second item of the morning.
Hearing to consider a request by Jay Jameson for a development plan coastal development permit. County file number DRC 2007-00173. Supervisorial District Number 4, Paul Siddig, Project Manager.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members. This is Jameson Development Plan, located in Calendar Garrett. Currently, the site is an undeveloped 19.57-acre site. Then they're proposing the storage of up to 993 fifth wheel and RV travel trailers, not to be no RVs with motors, things of that sort, to be discussed later. Development of the site will include a 6-foot tall fence with privacy slats and topped with barbed wire for a total of 8 feet in height. Landscaping along the east, south, and west setbacks, as to be detailed in later slides, will be complete and provide additional screening and visual impact decreasing things. And there will be no public access to the site and no employees on site, as this is to be a storage site for part of the a larger storage company and such, to be discussed later. Located in Calumet Garrett, in a community that is located in the South County, the site itself is located south of Highway 1, known as Cabrillo Highway and Willow Road in this area, along the Sheridan Road, as seen on the slide above, north of Reba Place, a road that is not county maintained but is currently a dirt road. Located in the industrial land use category, with industrial zoning to the north, west, and partially to the south, with residential suburban to the east and the majority of the south. It should be noted that to the south there is heavy industrial area zoning, but this site is not included in that land use category alteration. The streets are Highway 1 to the north, Sheridan Road flanking one side, and Arriva Place to the south, which connects from Sheridan Road to, I believe, continuation Highway 1 as it curves around this area, but is, again, not fully developed. Aerial photo shows the extent of the site as currently it is. Noting that, that the land to the north is zoned for industrial use, though there's currently row crops in the north. Again, to the east is are also row crops, but the land is zoned for residential suburban use. South is a mixture of single-family residences and a variety of industrial uses. Same to the west. Primarily uses are facilities of car wrecking and storing, things of that sort. To north, the buildings you see there are mini-storage buildings. And there's a proposal for an additional mini-storage in the partially vacant lots to the north along Sheridan Road. This is the design of the site, denoting the location of, or possible location for storage of trailers. The areas located highlighted in blue will be detailed further in the next slide. Improvements to the site include drainage basins along Sheridan Road, providing sufficient drainage for the entirety of the site, along with the fact that the site will be paved with compacted Class 2 base. Working with the existing soils, which are sandy soil in this area, allowing a very high permeability. Along with retaining retention basins are landscaping, seen in small dots there, which will be, again, discussed later. And there will be a road improvement to the south along from Sheridan to the second access point, as required by CAL FIRE. Paving will be 20 feet wide, and the access easement is 40 feet in total. Here's, again, highlights of the development, noting the hydroseed mixed landscape for the drainage basins along Sheridan Road, and the mix of Leyland cypress and Mayaporum to fill in front of the existing or proposed fences. I also note the proposed fence design and details for the road itself, all-weather road access per CAL FIRE requirements.
Before you go on, we can go back to that detail, because I didn't catch that for the landscape.
My apologies. So
the Mayaporum and other, what
was Leyland cypress?
Cypress were going to fill along in and cover most of the chain link fence?
Yes, the majority of it, where the area is not hydroseed landscape for the drainage basins. So the drainage basin, again, will only be along Sheridan Road. So back a slide. To the south and to the east will be fully landscaped with this mix of vegetation. So over the years, this will fill in, I believe, fairly quickly, depending on the plants.
Okay, so the plan is for that to fill in and
correct,
cover the whole fence area.
And to the north, note that there's a no setback per the ordinance standards for industrial land use categories, since both lots are not part of the Jameson project as proposed. Again, you can see in more detail the kind of driving circles that people have done on the site. Again, not part of the development itself, but existing use of the site by other parties. You can see in the distance some of the residences south of Aruba Place. Here's the panoramas, looking from Sheridan Road and Aruba Place, looking northwest, northeast. Get some feel for the size of the site and the nature of the covering currently. Again, looking from now along Aruba Place, if you were to travel west of Long River Place towards other side of things, noting the existing development of field crops. And this is roughly the property line as looking from that side. One thing to note that the within the conditions themselves, I failed to include conditions from Public Works, and I could take this moment to read those into the record, or I could mention those later as a sees fit. I'll just read them now just to get that over with. To be included, let's see, towards the end of, I believe, after condition 10, I believe, as it stands, conditions for access improvements. At the time of the application for construction permits, the applicant shall design road and or streets to be constructed to the following standards unless design adjustments are approved by the Public Works Department in accordance with Section 1.2 of the Public Improvement Standards.
Mr. Sittig, I'm sorry, I was writing a note to myself.
Okay.
Where are you?
This is something that will be added in because I failed to include this. If you actually look in the staff report itself or the full packet of stuff.
Do you have it? Do we have it in writing, or are you just reading it in the record?
It's actually attached to the initial study in the back of things.
So you're proposing to add this as a new condition?
These are new conditions that should have been included previously. They were.
And what condition number will it have and what page will it be on?
I believe, my apologies for jumping around so much. It'd be somewhere along conditions 9 and 10, conditions to be completed prior to issuance of construction permit, on page 2-9 currently.
So we're going to add a new 9 and 10 and renumber, or are we going to add a new 11?
We'll start with 11, I'd say. So it'll be 11, okay. 12, and 13.
And then we'll renumber the rest.
Correct.
And the new 11, 12, and 13 that you're proposing we add, the language for that is
I believe on page 2-48. Yes. Yeah. This is language copied directly. Proposed recommended the conditions of approval. The numbering would go access improvements. The first one would be number 11. Then okay. The applicant offer for dedication. That section would be 12.
Okay.
And then improvement plans would be 13. And that all is one section.
We also have on 2-49 some fees.
That needs to be amended on. The fees are discussed, but they aren't called out specifically.
Okay.
Okay, so we just need to be very clear about this. Number 11 is going to be access improvements. Number 12 is going to be...
Second part of that.
The applicant offer for dedication. Number 13 is going to be the improvement plans?
Correct.
Okay.
So how far does number 13 go down?
13 is the remainder of the page.
And then what about prior to issuance of grading permit?
That one, there's already a condition to that effect.
Okay.
That is not, this is an improved wording. That would be condition number 10. This would probably just replace number 10 in whole for simplicity's sake.
So we are going to strike the existing condition number 10 on page 2-9?
Correct.
Actually, Glenn Marshall, County Public Works. I just assume leave the existing number 10.
Oh, of course. It's road fees.
It's road fees.
Okay.
Why would we strike that?
I was looking for clarification of which road fees, things of that sort.
Yeah.
Okay.
I thought maybe it would be more...
I'd like to modify condition 10 if possible. And actually, I'd like to modify the new condition 12 as well.
Okay. Take it away, Mr. Marshall.
Okay. So for 12A, I'll read it into the record. I want to change 50 feet to 40 feet. So for future road improvements, 40 feet along Arriva Place to be described as 40 feet along the southerly property line.
Okay.
And that's my only change there. Jumping back to page 2-9, condition 10, I'd like to rewrite that to say prior to issuance of a construction permit or construction permits, all road fees shall be paid to the county. The project is located in the South County Road Fee Area 2 and anticipated to generate one p.m. peak hour trip.
And the practical effect of changing building permits to construction permits is what?
There are no building permits for this project. There will be a grading permit or a construction permit only.
And it's anticipated...
Okay, could talk more to that detail.
Well, I don't know if that's reading correct. On page 2-8...
Where are you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Is that reading correct? Does that mean the top... When you're topping... Are you topping 8 feet or are you topping 6 foot?
My intent there would be that the entirety of the fence would include the measurement of the barbed wire.
Okay.
So the addition with the chain link plus the barbed wire would total 8 feet.
We might want some clarification there.
Okay.
Yeah, let's make it clear.
Yeah, I would think so.
And I actually would like to talk about the barbed wire, so maybe we can save that discussion until we bring this back to the commission.
Okay.
Any other questions, Commissioner Muska?
That's it, as far as all I have.
Commissioner White?
I had a technical, question on, and it goes to that there's no structures, but before I get there on condition 15 on page 2-9, it says prior to occupancy of any structure, so I didn't know if we even need that condition in there.
That would be probably prior to final, because it's still just a final review.
So just change occupancy of structure to final? Final inspection or
final inspection?
Correct.
Okay. And if you go to to 2-10, 16, which talks about vesting of the land use permit, the standard, this is the technical question that maybe, I know this is a standard definition of when it's vested is when there's construction above grade. I'm not sure there'll be, I don't know if the fence will allot for that or not, or this needs to be reworded. It's 2-10-16?
Yes.
The second part
the
of
moment
that
I'm,
paragraph.
I'm scratching my head, to be honest. We could reword it just to make it simple and make it work with what we have.
Maybe it's... I don't know when it would become vested because there's no structure with development above grade.
Isn't that covered in the ordinance itself, where there's no structure?
It is covered in Bill Robeson from County Planning. It is covered in the ordinance, so it really falls back to that grading issue. After the grading has occurred, then that would be the vesting point. So we can clarify that in this in just a moment.
Okay, so staff's going to work on some revised language there. I think there's an argument that a fence is a structure, but...
Well, it talks about...
What is development?
Yeah.
Yes. What's a structure? Today.
Before lunch?
Anything else, Mr. White?
Let me see here. That's it for now.
Okay. To my right.
I had one question, and it is about the wastewater disposal system or the fact that there's no need for a special wastewater disposal system. And I was just a little concerned about the idea that it's RV storage, and is there any concern about runoff, you know, oil, gas, that kind of stuff from a bunch of vehicles sitting there for a while?
Also to county planning, a clarification on that point, there actually will, it's not for RVs, there's no motor vehicles in lease. This is all for trailers that will be carried to and from the site with a tow vehicle of some sort. Okay. Applicant could speak to more on that effect, but my understanding is that this is one of many sites that serves as storage for these vehicles that are essentially campers for a camp facility that is also owned by the same company. The company stores these for people in the community or elsewhere who wish to use Pismo area campgrounds. I think specifically these campgrounds owned by the same company. The company facilitates the storage of these things elsewhere for the ease of access and not needing to keep it around on your own property. So there's no engines involved besides those that would be used to drive vehicles on and off the site.
Okay, that's good. Thank you.
Okay, well,
pardon
that does just lead into some of my questions then about the distinction here, because we have in the conditions the specific note that no motorized vehicles will be stored. So what if they did want to store motorized vehicles or something changes and they did want to take RVs?
That would probably have to amend the plans then, because this is a number of assumptions have been made out based on this fact that it's not motorized vehicles. Part of the fact that you can have a non-sealed surface, the fact that we're allowing permeation of the soil because of the surfacing, surface treatment. That would have to be looked at in different ways, possibly reevaluated, possibly a new permit. I'm not quite sure how that would be.
Okay, because that gets into one of the next questions mm-hmm. then, that that we're requiring at least chip seal. And so chip seal is permeable then?
Error on my behalf. I'll jump back to that area. Page, I believe, 2-2 discusses this. The applicant had proposed class 2 base compacted or red rock, which is permeable, but I erroneously cited parking lot construction standards as noted on 2-3. This is my reference for chip seal came from the standard. The standard has a table basing location of the lot versus urban and rural areas. It's basic standard. So here's the baseline, what you can have. The baseline for an urban area with for a parking lot is chip sealed. That's just the baseline.
So it sounds like we needed to revise a condition somewhere to clarify the type of surfacing material that will be used for the lot. Let's wait, because I think we do need to have a discussion on that, mm-hmm. and it's not just whatever's proposed or whatever's required.
Right.
So
right.
maybe we could mark
I have
that
highlighted
for
as well.
Okay. to get there later, and maybe after we hear from the applicant or we could direct
okay.
the applicant.
So if I may summarize, the chip seal was additioned on my behalf. The applicant was designed the project for a different surfacing. Chip seal is not permeable. It involves some oil substance, I believe, which would kind of trickle down into the water, into the sandy soil,
okay,
and would not really be suitable in the least.
Okay, and so the applicant is proposing then red rock or some kind of base.
Yes, they
rock.
Can speak more to the details of that. That is something that is permeable. They've worked with Public Works already, and
they
part
okay.
of the design of the project.
We'll get to that.
Yeah. So also the drainage basins have been designed specifically with the surfacing material and also with the size of the lot, things of that sort.
Oh, good.
All in mind.
Okay, so that'll be good to hear more about then. And then moving on, question, you kind of addressed then about the camp space within 3 miles, but will you help clarify that? So as I'm understanding it, then this is a service where staff people would take these fifth wheels or non-motorized camping vehicles to the campgrounds at Pismo, which are within 3 or 10 miles? Or
yeah, the applicant can speak more into detail about this, but this is, from my understanding, part of the service they provide. I believe that they own the actual campgrounds, camp fields, with the area is primarily used for people who have trailers to bring them on and kind of trailer camping, if you will.
Okay, so it is part of a package, and they're already doing
that is my understanding.
At the other sites.
Yeah, this is they have other sites that are much closer to the actual use location of use, but these are for ideally resident or people who would be using the site, using the campground facilities much less frequently. So this is something that would not be seeing that much use because people wouldn't be requesting their their items taken from storage that often.
That often. Okay, got it. And so then moving on to water allotment and use.
Mm-hmm.
So we have some kind of water allotment. I'm just curious what the water usages would be. I see the hydrants listed and the landscaping. Would there be anything else, or is
to my understanding, no, that's limited. There's no necessity of on-site employees because of how the site is monitored via cameras that are monitored off-site. There's no maintenance of the storage items on-site. This is solely for storage. So water on-site would be limited to that of landscaping needs, which could, if designed appropriately, could be something that could phase out over time. And hydrants, which is just an as-need basis, of course.
Okay, so that's our understanding. So is there a condition in currently listed that would limit water use to these things? I don't believe
no,
there is,
not.
So I'm hoping maybe we could have a discussion after
okay.
we hear from the applicant about somehow limiting use to these things so it doesn't expand somehow. And I got the landscaping plan. Thanks. That's
okay.
my list. Yep.
Okay.
I had a little follow-up, if
yes.
that's okay. Commissioner Wyatt rolled into, I was good. Was going to wait on the applicant's project description, but I did have some questions on that. And one of mine was, the way I understand from reading the staff report, that employees will go pick up these trailers, take them out and set them up for the folks to use. And one of my questions, would there be any washing or cleaning of these vehicles on this site? And the employees, is there any need for any restroom facilities? And that I didn't know how far away the campground was or if the restrooms are there or if that had been looked at all.
To my understanding, there will be no additional services done on site, be they restroom facilities for employees or repair maintenance cleaning of the items on site. Just because, again, this is it's close enough. It's not 10 miles, or it's not 100 miles off. It's maybe 10 miles from where things are. I'm not quite sure, again, the distances. But something that you can plan ahead and use the bathroom beforehand, and you'll be all right. Cleaning, I believe, could be done on the campground sites themselves, but again, the applicant could clarify that.
Okay. Yeah,
it's not designed with anything. There's no spigots designed on the site for hose hookups, things of that sort.
Don't mean to be crude, but I was just envisioning a couple of guys going out to hook up a trailer on 20 acres with a bunch of other trailers, and, you know, there's a lot of convenient places to use the restroom out there. Thank you.
Speaking yeah. from experience,
yeah, of course.
Well, absolutely. I think we all can do that.
Knowing the job.
If there are no other questions, we'll go to the applicant, assuming the applicant's here in the audience. We don't have a speaker slip, so if you could fill one out so we can get the spelling of your name, that would be helpful.
Good morning, Jeffrey Emmerich, Gary Taylor and Associates. Also here today is Jay Jameson, who's the general manager of Pismo Coast Village in Pismo Beach. I think one of the first things I'd like to talk about, simple. They have their own trucks, they go pick them up, they bring them back. And the idea is that this site, you might get two or three in a day at most. You might go weeks without ever going back out to the site to pick up units. So that's the motorhomes. The chip seal came up, and you know, I'll just say right now that there's an error in the ordinance. It talks about a minimum surfacing for a parking lot is chip seal. Well, chip seal is something you do to a road to make it last longer. You put oil on it, you put rock down on it. This is where you hate driving on it because the rock's flying up and doing all that stuff. The last thing you want to do is put oil on the ground. Let's pour oil on the ground and put rock on it. It's not going to do any good at all. It's not going to create a surface or anything else. It's just contaminating the soil.
Okay, but so would you address while you're there, Mr.
Yep.
Emmerich, then the surface that you're planning
to
use?
So what we're intending to use is either red rock or class 2 base, compacted, so that we have a surface to park on and drive on. This also gives us a lot more permeability than paving, and it's also a lot cheaper than paving. So that's the whole idea behind that. It gives us a permeability in the neighborhood, our C value, probably about 0.35 to 0.4, as opposed to something closer to 0.9 for a paved surface. So we got a lot more recharge going on there. It helps us also with the sizing of the basins. You also talked about water usage. The staff report talks about an estimated usage of 0.54 acre feet per year, And, you know, I took a quick little look at that. I think it's going to be quite a bit less than that. It's only going to be used for the landscaping. They'll be on the drip irrigation system, and based on the area of landscaping in this project and a half an acre foot, that comes out to about 8.5 inches of irrigation a year. And it just seems high to me, especially for a drip irrigation system. And they talked about washing the units too. The Pismo Coast Village has the campgrounds. They also own the Pismo Beach RV maintenance shop there down on Coast Highway. So all the washing, if that occurs, of the vehicles is there in Pismo Beach at their shop. So that's not happening. The concept for this site really is 20 acres to put the RVs in and fence it and monitoring it, which you might think twice about using the area around there as a restroom because you're being monitored at all times.
on tape. Excuse me, so while you're there, Mr. Amrick, would you be amenable then to some kind of added condition language that the water use will be limited to the hydrants and the landscaping?
No problem at all.
Okay.
Let me see. Was there a question about the fencing and the barbed wire?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Well, I think the question number one was, are you proposing a 6-foot chain link with 2 feet of barbed wire on top?
Yes.
As opposed to an 8-foot with two on top.
Six foot of chain link.
So it's 6 plus 2. And then I had a question about the barbed wire. Do you have barbed wire at your other facilities?
Yes.
Is barbed wire really a necessity in your opinion?
Yes. It's a deterrent.
I mean, just visually, it's so unattractive, and it just seems like overkill from a certain perspective. I mean, I know it's zoned industrial in this area, but there are residential uses nearby, and it just sort of strikes, visually, it sort of smacks of a prison yard. And I'm wondering if perhaps we might be able to have a successful operation without 2 feet of barbed wire on top of the chain link fence.
If they didn't need it from the other facilities, I don't think they would have proposed it, or we wouldn't have proposed it. One. Two, I'm not sure if you're familiar with the plant species that we've proposed. The myoporums are very quick growing, and Leyland cypress will probably take 2 or 3 years before you won't see the fence at all.
But they're not going to be on all four sides of the property, as I understand the landscaping plan.
The one side that it won't be on is adjacent to another storage area, industrial use. It's immediately adjacent to that. Then the only other spots where it won't be would be where the basins are, which might be half of the frontage along Sheridan Road.
Where are the other facilities with the necessity of the barbed wire fencing?
You know, I know there's one down near the landing area at Oceano Airport. And I know Jay could tell you where the rest of
it is. Then insert 2 feet of barbed wire as it stands. If we did want to discuss barbed wire further, we could revise it from there.
And you had some language on Commissioner White's question about the vesting?
Oh. My apologies. Page
210?
Yes, condition 16, referring to substantial site work.
Before Paul jumps into that, I can propose a condition that goes to Commissioner Wyatt's limiting of the water usage.
Okay.
And it would be after the water conservation number 8, and maybe it could be numbered as number 9. But what it essentially is doing is limiting the water usage to landscaping. So it would be read as water use shall be limited to only the approved landscape plan. And we could just leave it simply at that. But I could add some more if your commission
water
would like.
Water use shall be limited to?
Only the uses approved on the, or I just have water use shall be limited to only the approved landscape plan.
And does that cover then, or are we okay with the hydrant coverages? Is that kind of a given since they're not actually using? Or
hydric use, I believe, is fine.
Okay.
Or we could add that.
And necessary hydrant usage?
Sure. We could add the
just
hydro
to make sure they're covered
hydro,
since they're
yeah.
listed.
Yeah.
I'm no water for fire. Just the myoporum only.
So do we need to add another condition, Mr. Robeson, or can we just tag that on as a final sentence?
To the existing nine, or where are you?
Well, actually, it's existing condition
eight.
Number eight.
Yeah, I would think we could just add it in there.
Yeah, because we've already got a big renumbering thing that's going to be coming
okay.
with the new 11,
so we
12,
just
and 13.
Add this, the wording to the end of number eight.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
If you don't see a problem with that, that's probably the easiest.
So we're just adding landscape plan and fire suppression or fire hydrants? Or
yeah.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, fire suppression seems like
a
cleaner way of saying that, I guess.
Water use shall be limited to only the approved landscape plan and fire suppression.
We're all okay with that before we move on?
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. And so the vesting then?
Which is the new 19.
New 19.
So I think this paragraph is good until the word substantial, a little bit lower down on number 16 on page 2-10. Substantial site work is defined by land use ordinance section, and it lists the section as site work progressed beyond grading and completion of structural foundations. We can...
Can we just strike that last sentence?
We can.
Okay.
But weren't we talking about grading then?
Might we then change substantial site work, the previous?
Right.
Okay. So a sentence reads, this land use permit is considered to be vested once a construction permit has been issued and completed, perhaps? Or completed and final? Or I don't know how you want to say it. Or completed and initiated? I don't know how to... Because the grading is primarily what's happening on the site. There's landscaping and there's installation of the fencing, hydrants... I believe the earlier talk was about the initiation or completion of the grading being enough to vest the project.
So we could just strike from substantial on.
Yes.
Okay.
Good.
That sounds good to me.
Strike
mm-hmm.
the last sentence.
Will you read? So we're looking at vested once a construction permit has been issued.
Mm-hmm.
Period.
Well, we can
next
continue on and substantial site work has been completed.
But that's the question here, that substantial site work isn't
we could,
clear.
Your commission could define it now if you'd like to, or
I'm
leave
fine
it
with that. I mean,
well,
you know,
once the point is to clarify, it still doesn't seem.
I think it's
clear.
Defined in the ordinance. The ordinance covers whether there's buildings taking place or
right.
no buildings.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we're just going to leave it?
I don't think it's an issue. Let's just strike the last sentence and move on.
Okay, great.
All right.
Okay, so that is the new condition number 19, old condition number 16 on page 210. And then I believe we were going to doctor a condition regarding the surfacing of the lot. Either, I don't know if we're going to revise an existing one or add a new one specifying chip seal or...
Not
class.
Two,
I mean, I'm specifying red rock or class 2 base. Does staff have a preference whether this should be a new condition, or do you see one existing that you'd prefer to modify?
It could be part of the actual approved development. You could clarify the approved development and call out.
What page are you on?
2-8. My apologies.
Okay.
Either add on to number one to clarify.
So that's Exhibit B, conditions of approval.
Correct.
To allow the construction of a structure. So we're going to add a new number 3?
That is, yeah.
You can also add just a number 1.
To read?
Site surfacing shall consist of class 2 base, or compacted class 2 base, or red rock. I'm not sure if we want to give Public Works grounds to alter that then.
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
Site surfacing shall consist of red rock or class 2 base.
Or equivalent.
And
compacted class 2 base or equivalent.
If you do not want to renumber, we can
that
also
would be nice.
Add that to number 1, just as another
that would
component to that.
Save some.
Let's do that. And as they said, they've got an economic incentive to go with this type of surfacing, so I'm sure it's not something that would slip through the cracks for them.
No,
okay,
this
just wanted to make sure that we would only do better there, no worse.
Yeah,
right,
it'll
okay.
always be better.
Thanks.
Okay, any other additions, questions, discussions?
Fence. Let's go back to the fence, because we do have a clarified condition from staff, but I'm also hoping maybe somehow we can do a little better on the fence. We did see picture of some adjacent site with a really hideous prison-like fence. So I do understand we have one fence line that's adjacent to the industrial. So I am not concerned about that particularly, but we're going to have half of, what's our road, Sheridan?
Correct.
Here, a fence showing. Half of it will be covered, I trust, relatively quickly, knowing my aquarium will grow fast with a little water. But we're still having half of that fence uncovered along the road at the drainage basin area. So I'd like us to think about maybe at least doing a little better for that section, something a little less unappealing.
Well, I can certainly understand the impulse towards less appealing, to getting more appealing and not so unappealing, but you're talking about a bunch of nice little cozy homes right on the side of the fence. And even I, in my... all of my honesty, if I only saw a 6-foot chain link fence and I was cold and hungry, bam, I'd be over that fence in 2 seconds flat, living in a nice little home.
I'm not suggesting doing away with.
Well, then you're talking about, okay,
link,
then put an 8-foot fence there, or, you know, I mean, I think that when people, I mean, I agree with you totally in terms of the impact it makes. Barbed wire doesn't look good, but that's why you put it there, is because people go by and go, ooh, barbed wire, too hard to deal with. And
they could get a dog. Chain link as well, but I'd like us to think about some kind of option that maybe wouldn't be too onerous, at least for that section that's not going to be covered by landscaping.
Rolled barbed wire? I mean,
that could be a little less unattractive without great extra expense. Suggestions?
If I may. If you look at the aerial photo as currently shown on. Just a reminder of the area that this is in. This is industrial use. Also, the surrounding area is industrially used, for lack of a better term. The fence across the street actually is a plain security fence type thing, chain link fence, I believe, some barbed wire along the top. It's not covered in the least.
It's not what?
It's not covered in the least. It is just a plain fence, no landscaping. Landscaping consists of local grasses. I'm just speaking for the context of the area. I understand that the areas that, in my understanding, would be the most viewed by neighbors on the common day-to-day basis would be the south property line. So from their point of view, things would be screened. From folks who are, whatever happens to the east, since that is residential suburban zoning, it could eventually become houses. That side also will be screened fully. So in my view, that it's maybe part of the character of the area. It's an industrial road.
Ooh.
I hate to say, but looking again at the site itself, that's the area itself is not winning any awards for beauty.
Okay, right, but point taken. Mm-hmm. But so that doesn't mean we can't do a little better. Okay, just because it's not an overly attractive area doesn't mean maybe we shouldn't make a little effort. Tell us what area we're talking about.
The landscaping is a little effort. The landscaping is the effort.
Well, we just have half of the Sheridan side. Aren't some residents going to be coming along Sheridan there? I see residences down past there that would be coming down along Sheridan. Aren't they going to have to look at half of the Sheridan frontage unscreened? Am I imagining that, or is
no,
that
it's true. You would drive past it, but again, you would be driving past a variety of other things. Again, the other side is.
And the reason I
understand that you're not. We want to make this as good as possible, but at the same time, in context, this could be the best of the best.
The reason that section of the Sheridan fence is unscreened is because there's a drainage basin there. Is that correct?
Correct.
What if the drainage basin were located on the essentially the interior of the fence, and so the same landscaping could be continuous on the exterior of the fence?
I believe from probably the applicant's perspective, that would mean decreased usage of the site, but that's something the applicant would probably want to speak to. staff could support that, but again, applicant would probably want to speak his mind at the moment.
I mean, you could just flip, basically, the location of the fence and the location of the drainage, and I don't see how that would really impact the use of the site.
And
or do you have a setback issue there from the
property
line?
You have a setback along the street there, and...
But I'm sure that at the top of the drainage basin that borders the property line and the fence, that there's some planting area there that could accommodate vines or something like that that's not... That would also obscure the...
Let's just require the trees that we're requiring on the other fence lines to be contiguous around the entire fence line. Mm-hmm. Does that work?
Yeah, we'll
okay.
Fence except the one side that is proposed,
back.
Whatever that side is with so the industrial boundary.
We'll need to add
right.
We're just talking about the Sheraton side.
Thank you. So that condition needs to be amended. To clarify this direction, and that would be which condition? Landscaping.
Number 13.
On which page?
2-9.
Here you go. Landscaping shall be installed and bonded for.
If I may, also to county planning. Condition number 3, site development on 2-8, could be amended to include just another line. Plans shall include complete landscaping or complete vertical landscaping.
And landscaping plan that fully screens
all setbacks. There's no setback. I guess all fencing along
Sheraton and Ariba.
Sheraton and Ariba.
Screens fencing along Sheraton and Ariba. And that is condition number 3 on page 2-8. Okay.
I only have one comment on that. Mm-hmm. We have the entry gate there along Sheraton. Will that have chain link on, or will that have barbed wire on top of the entry gate?
Yes.
And that's one question I missed earlier, too, is how far is the setback from Sheraton to the gate itself? Is it sufficient enough to be towing these trailers?
To have length, you mean full
yes,
length then for the vehicle and the tow?
And the trailer to pull off of Sheraton before they can get the gate open so they're not hanging out into Sheraton.
I'm assuming there'll be probably an electric gate, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And if we did set the gate back, a distance that we felt was sufficient for what we needed.
Do you happen to know that distance, sir?
I think it's...
I think he has 30 feet, John.
The condition's 30. I think I have it at 40.
And you think that's enough for a substantial truck and the trailer itself?
It's enough for the truck and darn near a 40-foot fifth wheel or a 30-foot travel trailer.
Mr. Marshall, concurring with that?
I'm concurring with that. We'll look at that if the grading plan is stated again. I did notice it on the plans. It did look said 30 feet, but I think that's from the property line. So we still have the shoulder and...
Mm-hmm.
So I think it appears to be sufficient as long as the natural... I think
as long
Commissioner
as
White brought
conditions on the site.
Exactly.
Yeah,
as long as they can pull off the road and not park there and block
iron. Yeah, that was the concern.
That's the intent.
But again, they won't be getting out to open the gate. They've got an electronic gate, just like
this is a quick,
many of us,
quick
right?
entry on somewhere in here.
They mm-hmm. could have to wait.
So I don't know if that's a push-button entry or what that might be.
Powers out.
Okay.
It appears to be covered. Correct.
I think we've probably beat this one to death. If nobody else has any burning issues, I'm going to just quickly summarize the changes to the conditions.
If I could make one last cleanup, and it's on your first page, 2-1, under the subject heading, I would just like to strike that RV wording there.
Which one? Where are you, Mr.
It's under the subject heading on page 2-1.
Up a page.
So it says, hearing to consider a request by Jay Jameson for a development plan / coastal development permit to allow the construction of a fifth wheel / travel trailer storage lot.
Okay.
So I just didn't want any confusion on the motorized vehicles to come into play in the future.
Thanks for
Okay, with that, I'm going to quickly go summarize the changes to the conditions. We've got a change in condition 1 on page 2-8 to specify the site surfacing being Red Rock Class 2 base or the equivalent. We've got a change to condition 3, also on page 2-8, to specify that the landscaping shall fully screen the fencing along Sheridan and Ariba. We've got a change to condition number 8 on the top of page 2-9 to specify that water use shall be limited to landscaping and fire suppression. We have a change also on page 2-9 to condition number 10 to specify that the road fees shall be paid upon issuance of construct to substantial site work. Did I miss anything?
Yeah, I think so. 2-8, number 2, we clarified exactly what we meant by an eight foot tall.
Oh, that's correct. Yeah, 8 to 6.
Yeah. And 2-1, we clarified the removing the RV part of that.
Yeah, that's not a condition.
No,
that is
okay.
A change to
yeah.
the motion that
okay.
will
right.
very soon be made.
Right. I think that's all of them.
Okay. Mr. Emmerich, did you have anything to add before
yes,
we make a motion?
Condition 11A. I believe was modified from Ariba Place, 50 foot to 40 foot. Just didn't want you to miss that part.
Yeah, that was on page
2-8, 2-9.
2-48, it's 40. The new condition 11.
12, actually.
12A.
12A, mm-hmm. On page 2-48.
Yes.
That was the change that
yes.
was read into the record by Mr. Marshall, changing 50 to 40. Thanks for pointing
great.
That out. Do we have a motion?
Madam Chairperson, I'd like to move to adopt the negative deck in accordance with the applicable provisions of CEQA. Number 2, approve development plan DRC2007-00173 based on the findings listed in Exhibit A and the conditions listed in Exhibit B as modified and read into the record by staff and reviewed by our chairperson.
Do we have a second? Second. It's been moved by Commissioner Melskow, seconded by Commissioner Wyatt. I'd like to briefly speak to the motion. If staff could put up the first aerial photo of the site, I'm going to vote to support the project. It's, you know, it makes sense. But as I look at this aerial, I'm reminded that Napomo is in the process of losing its agricultural viability as a community. And I remember talking about this when former Commissioner Rappa was on the commission about how if we were going to seriously talk about preserving agriculture in Napomo, that we probably need to undertake an update of the area plan and talk about rezoning or creating some new standards, because I understand this is not an active ag parcel. Clearly it's being used as a local recreational attraction. But it's surrounded by agriculture, and it's surrounded by agriculture that I hazard a guess will soon be converting to non-agricultural uses, and this approval today is probably going to be one of the reasons that are used to justify future conversions of agriculture in this area. And so it strikes me that we're sort of in Napomo, we're where Arroyo Grande was about, I don't know, 10 or 12 years ago when that community really undertook a focused effort to change their land use patterns and their political focus of that community to actively save their urban agriculture within their city limits. And they've done an exemplary job, and I think everybody would agree that that's been a bonus to that community. So I just bring this up because it is such a graphic example of where we are and what we're doing and what we talk about all the time. And so if the folks in Napomo are listening, or the political elected officials in Napomo are listening, it's my opinion, at least, as the chair of this commission, that it's time we take a focused look on doing some things differently to preserve agriculture in the community of Napomo. And that's my editorial comment. Would the clerk please call the roll?
Commissioner Muskow?
Yes.
Commissioner White?
Yes.
Commissioner Christensen?
Yes.
Commissioner Wyatt?
Yes.
Chairperson Christie?
Yes. Okay, it's 11:45. We've got 15 minutes until our lunch break. My inclination is to at least get a staff presentation on the next item, unless people have continuity issues with that. Seeing no objection, will the clerk please introduce the next item?
Hearing to consider a request by Dana Brown for a conditional use permit. County file number DRC 2007-00128, Supervisorial District Number 1, Shauna, Project Manager, Shauna Scott. Sorry, Shauna.
That's all right. Good morning, Madam Chair and Commissioners. I'm Shauna Scott, Senior Planner with Morrow Group, a division of SWCA Environmental Consultants, on behalf of County Planning and Department staff. Presenting the Brown Conditional Use Permit, DRC 2007-00128. The proposed project is a request for the conversion of an existing 2,292 square foot structure into surrounding uses are primarily agricultural and open space. There is a bed and breakfast and residence located approximately 2,000 feet west of the project site. The applicant owns the parcel to the northwest, which also includes 10 acres of vineyards, which are used for this winery. Approximately 7 acres of vineyards are located on site. The applicant has indicated that approximately 20 to 40 acres of additional vineyards are proposed on the project site.
Excuse me, Ms. Scott, while you're there,
absolutely.
That was a question I had.
Sure.
So 7 acres of grapes on the site.
On this parcel.
And 10 acres on an adjacent parcel owned by this same property owner.
That is correct.
Okay, thanks. Got it.
These next few slides include a brief history of the permitting that has been issued on this project site. The existing uses include an 8,000 square foot wine processing facility, a 2,992 square foot structure, a paved parking area, an 18 foot wide paved access road, on-site wastewater treatment systems, unpaved agricultural access roads, and vineyards. As shown in this close-up of the project site, which I believe this aerial is probably just over a year old or so, you can see the existing winery structure, some landscaping in front, the parking area, and where that white area is the building pad for the existing structure that's on site. You can see the location of the primary access road, and you can also see along the west side of that vegetated canyon, the location of an existing rough graded road, which extends actually all the way to the entrance of the paved primary access road. A portion of that road will be improved to meet secondary access road standards. The applicant was issued a minor use permit on August 20th, 2004. The minor use permit authorized construction of an 8,000 square foot wine processing facility, a 3,200 square foot tasting room, paved parking area, the paved access road, on-site wastewater treatment, and participation in industry-wide events. As part of the minor use permit approval, a visual impact study was conducted, which included mitigation measures, which were adopted as conditions of approval, specifying the location of the tasting facility and implementation of landscape screening. I just wanted to note that the applicant, upon construction of that existing structure, did implement those visual mitigation measures. A grading permit was issued and finaled in April 2007. The grading permit was for construction of the access road and the building pads for the winery of the tasting room. The applicant applied for a construction permit, which was finaled in the same time in April 2007, for the wine processing facility and on-site wastewater treatment system for the winery. In December 2007, the applicant applied for a construction permit for an 832 square foot building with a 2,160 square foot covered patio and on-site domestic wastewater system. This permit was applied for after the actual minor use permit for the project expired. Therefore, they were not able to use the approval of that minor use permit to use this structure for tasting. That is one of the reasons that we are here today, to consider the conditional use permit to actually use that structure for tasting, and also the applicant's additional request for special events.
So that raises a question. They couldn't use it for tasting. So what did they get a permit for? What was the structure going to be used for that they got the construction permit for?
Just a storage facility. They could use it for basically for an ag building or for storage, but they weren't technically allowed to use it for actual tasting use because the minor use permit approval expired.
Did they build it as a storage facility?
They actually built it. They built it so that they won't need to do any additional construction on the site upon approval of the structure for tasting.
So they basically built a tasting room.
That is
and
correct.
Called it a storage facility.
That is correct. So the physical changes have occurred, but the actual use is not permitted.
Okay.
Okay. This slide shows a site plan of the project site, including, you can see outlined in blue, the existing winery and the existing paved parking area and the paved primary access road. The uses for consideration today are conversion of the existing facility for use as a tasting facility, the access road proposed for secondary access, and the applicant's proposing a 40,000 square foot overflow parking area. This slide shows an enlarged footprint of the uses that are currently in operation pursuant to that minor use permit. And outlined in red is the location of the structure to be used for tasting. This slide shows a footprint of the building to be used for tasting. It is staff's recommendation to adopt the negative declaration in accordance with the applicable provisions of CEQA and approve the conditional use permit based on the findings listed in Exhibit A and the conditions listed in Exhibit B with the following recommended changes. If you'll turn to Condition 6A, and just to kind of give
a page number.
Sorry.
Get this there quicker, that's all.
Sorry, I will remember that in the future. And these conditions are these recommendations are based on additional consultation with the County Ag Department. It's on page 312.
So are you suggesting that we strike the current 6A and substitute this language?
That is correct.
Okay, you want to read that into the record?
Read condition 6A. Event parking shall be limited to existing improved parking areas, 21 spaces, paved area adjoining the winery, 12 vehicles, and an unpaved area adjoining the winery, 6 vehicles, and an area no larger than 20,000 square feet to accommodate an additional 50 vehicles for a total of 89 vehicular parking spaces during special events.
Thank you for that.
Staff also proposes two new conditions. Condition number 29 on page 317. To be located above the biological resources section. To state, prior to final building inspection, the applicant shall eliminate tasting facilities within the winery. The reason this condition is proposed is the applicant's currently conducting some tasting activities in the winery, and the Ag Department requested that the tasting be limited to the tasting facility. Assuming changing the numbers throughout the remaining of the conditions, on page 319, staff recommends an additional condition number 41.
Before we leave special condition
sure.
or new condition 29, I have a question for the Ag Commissioner's representative. And I'm just wondering why it's important to eliminate tasting within the winery.
I'm Michael Eisensee with the Agriculture Department. The only particular reason is that it's actually required by the ordinance, which limits a site to a single tasting room.
Okay. Thank you for that. And go ahead, Ms. Scott.
Okay. On page 319, assuming that all the subsequent numbers are bumped up one, new condition 41, stating for the life of the project, the applicant shall not convert the tasting facility into a restaurant. Unless there are any other questions, this concludes staff's presentation.
Are there any questions of staff at this point? I'm seeing some yeses. Oh, I'm sorry, the commissioner from the district.
That's
where
right.
we start. I was looking
That's
in the wrong
fine.
Direction. Commissioner,
That's quite fine, Madam Chair.
Commissioner White.
Before I get started, I need to disclose some ex parte contacts. I was contacted by the Calcaro's Vineyard and Winery owner, Dana Brown, and I met with her and her winemaker, General Manager Damian Grinley, and they gave me a tour of the property. It's a beautiful facility and a beautiful site. And I got a real good feel for the secondary access. Damian Grinley took me on a drive along that existing ag road, and I think it helped clarify what's coming, what I see being outlined in this staff report, that there is some, one of the concerns was the secondary access taking up more potential agricultural land, whereas the existing roadway, I believe already, the maintenance road for the vineyard already takes up that land. I don't really, staff report says that there could be a 18,000 square feet loss potentially because we're going from a 12-foot existing ag road to an 18 secondary access road, and it's approximately 3,000 feet long, and you multiply that by 6, you get about 18,000 square feet of additional area. But because of the topography and the terrain of everything, I don't see that's plantable area anyway where it would be, and Mr. Grinley pointed that out to me. Furthermore, there's a little bit of conflict on that in the staff report. If you go to...
Oh, are we still on your ex parte?
No.
Okay. No. So now we're on to the questions for staff
yes,
part.
Yes.
The only reason I ask is because it's now 11:59, and I don't know if we want to save questions until we come back from lunch. I'm seeing nodding over here on my right, so I hate to interrupt you while you're on a roll.
That's quite fine.
But maybe the ex parte break was
a good spot.
Good spot to break, and we will reconvene after lunch at 1:30. Before we go off the air, I do want to note for anyone who might be listening out there in the public that item number 4, the Acceleron conditional use permit, has... With that, we're going to call this meeting of the San Luis Obispo County Planning Commission back to order. We are on item 3, the Brown conditional use permit. We've had a staff presentation, and we were just starting to get into questions from commissioners when we broke for lunch. So, Commissioner White, I believe this is where you pick up where you left off.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, questions, and I apologize for rambling. I did run the ex parte in with my questions and too much coffee this morning, I guess. But in any case, question on 3-4, there's a note here about, based on a field review by Cal Fire Chad Zrelick, second large paragraph down, top of that paragraph. It mentions that the existing road, and we're talking about the secondary access road, generally meets the 18-foot width requirement. And that was my observation also when I was out on the site. And it brings to the question, it seems like that could be a potential conflict with 3.3-9, on page 3-9. Down at three quarters down the page, it talks about the agricultural department recognizes the difference between the 12-foot wide secondary access road and the 18 feet required by CAL FIRE. And
question I have and point that I'm trying to make is it goes on to say that if you calculated the distance of that road, approximately 3,000 feet, and added the 6-foot additional width, that would be an additional 18,000 square feet of agricultural land that would be affected, where it doesn't really appear that it would be near that much because the existing ag road is closer to 18 feet than 12. So that was my question.
Yes, you are correct. The existing road generally meets, it's approximately 16 to 18 feet wide, so that's the actual physical width of the road. So we're looking at the differences between the requirements, where an ag road is typically 12 feet, and the additional width is required for the for the special events. And so we're looking at it from a policy standard in that there's a difference in the width requirements if it's just used for ag. So, you know, while in reality the road will be used for both uses, only 12 feet is needed to use it for ag equipment, and then the additional width is necessary for CAL FIRES. Does that kind of answer your question?
Yes, and I understand more now why that was inserted as 12 feet, because you're calculating potential ag, because you could get away with 12 feet just for an ag access road.
Right.
But the practical reality on the ground is that it wouldn't really be a viable plantable area anyway. So are we really taking away from the ag production to that extent? That's the only point I was trying to make. So.
Okay.
And
before we leave the issue of the ag road, Commissioner White, the existing road is generally 18 feet in width.
Correct.
And you just said the standard ag road is traditionally 12 feet in width. Where does this ag road currently go?
It currently wraps around kind of on the edge of that canyon. I'm going to pull up the aerial. I can help. You can kind of see where the existing road is. That white, the soil is really white. You can see where it goes down kind of adjacent to that canyon. And then the wording on Peachy Canyon.
As we're looking at the screen, it's on the right hand. It's sort of
correct.
It's bordered by that, the wooded area.
Okay, here we go.
Okay,
so
there.
My pointer.
Wonderful.
Kind of follows along here, and then you can see where it actually extends all the way up through to kind of this point here where there's an existing gate. The applicant's not proposing to improve it all that distance to all the way to the gate. It'll actually have an entrance, I think somewhere around, like right here, onto Peachy Canyon.
So, and what is its current destination? Where does it go to on the site?
It currently wraps, it extends all the way into this part of the property, but it comes down here, and then it generally stops. Road is required by CAL FIRE for special events.
But it doesn't access the air, I mean, it's not really a secondary access. It doesn't get people to or from the site where the events are going to be held. So I'm just wondering what its utility is.
It actually, well, it will, if I expand out this aerial. Sorry, I'm going the wrong direction. It actually does, the primary access will be this existing paved road, and then the secondary access road extends kind of roughly up and then around.
So is there going to be some additional, because it doesn't look like there is a road there now.
There is, it does connect.
I think it's just not
showing up really well.
This might be
aerial,
but I think Bruce, I mean,
I was there. It's definitely there, and this might be an old aerial because I can't even recognize the vineyards that are planted here on this aerial. And there are vineyards that we saw on the photographs of the winery, you know, right behind the winery building. And that road continues next to those vineyards, and then winds down. So it runs all the way to the winery.
The road predates the planting of the vineyards, at least.
I think this aerial is. Here's a little bit antiquated.
It is because where you can see that white area of the pad, that's all constructed and landscaped to date.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, sorry to interrupt. I just, while we were talking
about
the road,
I
wanted to
consolidate. That's fine. It's good to get all that clarity. And that was one question. Thank you for the answer. The only other question I had, I talked to Glenn prior to the hearing, actually, on these. They were more Public Works questions. And one was on 3-13, condition 12. It talks about not directing the water towards Peachy Canyon on the drainage. And there was another comment on page 3-34 from, it was comments from Public Works, that speaks to allowing the water to take its natural flow and sheet across the road. Well, that appears to go downhill towards Peachy Canyon Road. So I was concerned if that's some sort of conflict or to get a better understanding of that.
Sure. Commissioner White?
Chair.
Chair Christie, Glenn Marshall, County Public Works. I do appreciate you bringing that to our attention, Commissioner White. A couple things, and going back to, I'll start from the very scratch. During the staff report, I believe on page 3-4, second paragraph down, second to the last line up from the bottom of that, it says Public Works include crowning to allow stormwater sheet flow. Basically, it's the very last sentence of the second paragraph. Drainage improvements requested by Public Works include crowning, and really that should say not crowning the road. So I just wanted that clarification, as that was brought up by Chair White, or Commissioner White.
So add the word not?
Not crowning. And in general, our concern is Peachy Canyon is a county-maintained road, and so they're going to create a new attachment, a new driveway approach with the secondary access, and they'll need an encroachment permit for that. And when we reviewed the initial submittal, they had, I think Eric Gobler had done a plan and profile of the secondary access road showing the alignment. And he had crowned the road, and we were concerned that water coming off that hillside would be trapped by the crown of that road and be directed down to Peachy Canyon. Mm-hmm. So what we're looking for is that road just have a constant cross slope that matches the gradient of the hillside, so the water coming off the hill sheet flows across the road and then continues down the hill and is not redirected.
So inserting the word not is sort of in the narrative of the staff report under the the project description. Is there a condition that would correspond to that change?
There is a condition, and it should be 3-13, condition 10, and actually the condition 12 as well. So 10 is the driveway approaches, actually condition 12 on 3-13.
Mm-hmm.
Upon application for construction permits, the applicant shall submit a grading and drainage plan demonstrating that the access road shall be constructed such that drainage is not directed towards Peachy Canyon. The road shall be constructed with a constant cross slope, not a crown section.
So the condition already takes care of
it. It already takes care of it, exactly.
That's
there's just this conflict between the text and the condition.
Okay.
Did I catch that?
That 99% gets me there.
Okay.
But the one part about not directed towards Peachy Canyon Road, I understand you don't mean all in one, you know, not to create a swell that directs it towards one location, Peachy Canyon Road. But in general, the slope of the natural runoff does go towards Peachy Canyon.
Right.
So that a little bit of a confusion there about, wouldn't want it to be interpreted that water cannot flow towards Peachy Canyon Road.
Some water will make it to Peachy Canyon. Our biggest concern is not a lot of concentrated water such that it would actually flow out in
on this.
I'll clarify that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions at this point, Commissioner White?
No, that's it for now. Thank you.
Commissioner Melskow, any questions?
I have none.
And the women to my right, Commissioner Christensen.
Thank you, Chair Christie. I just had a couple questions, and I might save most of them for later. I did want to talk about parking, or ask about parking, and thank you for the summation of the new conditions or summation of the event parking. So just to clarify to myself, what we have is basically a total of 89 vehicular parking spaces. That's it for everything.
That is correct.
Okay,
special event. So it's looking.
It's for any, it's for anything. There isn't any other parking besides those 89 spaces. There's no special employee parking or owner parking or any other place where people are. I mean, all parking for anything is going to happen in those 89 spaces.
Correct.
Okay. That's what I wanted to know. Thank you. Oh, and the other question was a real quick one about oak trees. And I'm looking at just page 3-17 and the conditions. And I know it's contained everywhere else. There's lots of discussion of it. But I'm just looking at that actual condition. So the idea that I understand is that there are no oak trees that are actually scheduled for removal But if during this construction, say, of the secondary road and that kind of thing, there are trees that are damaged to the extent where they might need replacement, this is the idea of this condition.
That is correct. They're not proposing removal. In looking at the secondary access road, improvements, including trimming required by CAL FIRE, would affect 5 oak trees closest to the road.
And so is that a euphemism for, yeah, we're going to have to replace these trees because they're going to get badly damaged enough to, I mean...
There's a requirement if there's any impact within the root zone or trimming that the 2-to-1 replacement ratio is required.
Okay. Okay, good. That's it for now.
Thanks. Commissioner Wyatt?
Yes. Well, I did just want to follow up. So that's what I also understood. So 5 oak trees, not necessarily removed, but it looks like likely impacted.
Correct.
Okay. And those haven't been impacted yet because they would be then they were a part of the road widening. Issue
right.
That hasn't actually happened already. Since some
right.
things have happened already and some haven't, I was a bit confused on what's already happened and what's anticipated to happen.
Right, that because that existing road kind of goes through an area where there's oak trees kind of closer to both sides of the road, so we don't know when that road went in, but any additional activities within that area were counting as an impact and requiring the mitigation.
But that did already happen? Or
I mean, whenever that road was originally graded, which we don't know, but in looking at the effects of this actual project, which will include improvements to the secondary access road, we quantified the impacts due to that, due to those actions.
To the improvements that will happen.
The improvements, because they have to bring, for example, there's a portion of the road that requires paving due to the 12% slopes, and so we looked at any additional activities that would be required to bring that road up to CAL FIRE standards and looked at the impacts that would occur as a result of those actions.
Thanks. Got it. I'm a little bit confused between the recommendation here from planning and the comments from Ag Commissioner's office. So Mr. Eisensee is here. I don't know if it makes more sense to bring him up after the applicants, or I'm guessing there's some other confusion as well, and I don't know how you'd like to handle that, Madam Chair.
Well, I've got some questions for Mr. Eisensee as well. He's staff, so maybe we'll start with your questions, and then we'll roll into my questions. And
bring him on up here now?
I think that makes sense.
Sort of. Okay, because we have a recommendation from planning staff as one thing, as I'm reading staff reports and letters, and a recommendation from Ag Commissioner's office as another thing. So I'm sensing a disconnect or somehow missing something. Mr. Eisensee, can you elaborate or clarify?
I'll try to elucidate
maybe
the question that was there. Michael Eisensee with the Agriculture Department. What I believe you're seeing between our original referral response and the project before you and the document that staff prepared is that there were some changes made to the project based upon our comments. And Shauna was in contact with me, and we discussed those. And so our letter isn't quite as relevant in that those issues have been satisfactorily addressed by the reduction in the parking area and by our those issues have been addressed so that if we were to write a letter today, we would not reach the same conclusion. We would say that the proposed visitor uses before you today are in fact incidental to the processing uses.
Based on the calculations of the area involved.
Based on the area calculations, yes.
And do you have some comments then on the issue that's secondarily before us, that this structure has already been built as not as a tasting room but as something else, but it would seem possibly with the intended use as a tasting room?
I don't have particular comments about that, no. But that's a matter for you to discuss.
You don't want to take that one on and help us in either. It was worth a try, I'd say.
I'd say it's not uncommon for projects to come in as an ag-exempt structure and request conversion to a winery.
Okay, well, I guess that's what we are seeing as well, and raises some issues, I guess.
Except I would propose that it's not a conversion, because it's never been used for anything. It was built as a tasting room, with the clear intent to be used as a tasting room. It was just built under the heading of being an ag structure. So it's a conversion in name only. It's actually an after-the-fact permit that's being sought for a structure that was built for something that it was not regulatorily envisioned to be. So I think that's a more accurate, I mean, that's not an ag commissioner question, that's sort of a planning staff question.
Could I jump in real quick?
Sure.
My understanding from reading the staff report is that with the, you know, Exhibit C.
It's true.
Exhibit C has the conditions of the original minor use permit of 2004, I believe it is. And that did allow the tasting room in that minor use permit. I think what happened...
It was just pointed out, we are sort of getting into a discussion of the project, okay. And this is something we talked about at the retreat. We all tend to do this sometimes. Okay. This is really the question part, and then we'll get into the discussion after we hear from the public and the applicant.
I guess while Mr. Eisen sees up, I would add one more question directed his way about going back then to our definition of secondary incidental, because with the modifications that have been made, we've now lessened the sort of square, we've reduced the square footage of the visitor serving non-ag use, but we haven't lessened sort of the nature of the business. Would you just talk a little about the distinction of how the Ag Commissioner's Office distinguishes secondary and incidental by square footage versus maybe some dollar value of production?
Sure. When we look at, well, let me back up. We have policy in the general plan, in the agriculture policy, specifically Ag Policy 6, which is about retail, commercial, and visitor-serving uses on agricultural lands. And it provides us the very exacting guidance that these uses are to be secondary to and incidental to the agriculture, the primary agricultural use of the site. That's as clear as the policy is. In implementation terms, what our department has done has been a two-step thing. We participated in the drafting of the ordinance that the applicant is applying under the winery standards, and there was discussion about how many, what kinds of uses and how many events and all that could occur on agricultural land in association with a winery. And so things like hotels or large restaurants were precluded. Things like events and tasting rooms were allowed, and with events in particular, they were allowed with certain standards placed on them, one being that under a minor use permit you could get up to 6 special events with up to 80 attendees at each event, and with a conditional use permit you could request up to 40 of these special events, and then there was other limitations in terms of noise and setbacks, etc. So that was step one in terms of trying to craft an ordinance that was addressing this secondary and incidental piece. Then we come to the project by project, and our office's traditional approach has been to look at the visitor use components that are proposed on it.
Nor does it have to be our interpretation of how we want to interpret secondary and incidental. So I think that's up for discussion, and I think that's probably the appropriate place to pursue this further. And I think most of my questions will probably bleed into discussion as well, Mr. Eisensee, so I'll hold those for later and hope your boss will let you hang around here for a little while longer. I do have one clarifying question for staff.
I'm trying to get a really good handle on what has actually been built and what is being proposed to be built. So as I read it on page 3-3, under the proposed project, under bullet number 1, we have existing a 2,992 square foot visitor service facility, which includes restrooms, kitchen, and office. And that's going to be the tasting room, per se, correct? And do we also have in existence already built the 22,160 square foot outdoor covered tasting area? Is that built or is that proposed?
That is built in the patio and the landscaping.
So that's 5,152 square feet of structure and accessories that is...
That's incorrect, I believe. If you take the 2,160 and add the 832, that comes up to the 2,992.
Those okay, that's not how I'm reading it. I'm reading a 2,992 structure, which is composed of, which includes 832 square feet of restroom, kitchen, and office.
Yes, and 2,160 square foot of outdoor.
Oh, so those two numbers combined are the entire 2,000.
It's not two separate structures.
Okay, so it's not 5,152.
No.
It's a total of 2,992. And then what is being proposed still and is not yet built is the 1,850 square foot patio and the landscaping, which I'm assuming is going to be adjacent to.
That is constructed.
That's also constructed.
Correct.
So that's existing. So they're really not asking to build anything. They're just basically asking for an as-built permit or a permit change or...
That is correct. The additional physical improvements will include improvements to the secondary access road.
Okay.
And then the use, and then the what will change or what will be under your, you know, your decision would be whether to grant the actual use of that building as a tasting facility in addition to the special events request.
And the question of the events. Okay, and that's probably what we'll be discussing after we hear from the applicants and the public.
Okay, so again, to clarify, everything built but the road, secondary road widening,
correct,
is really all that's left.
Correct.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, so our first speaker, I assume, is the applicant, Drew Brown. Is Drew, and followed by Damian Grundley. And welcome, Ms. Brown. How much time do you think you'll need for your presentation?
5 or 10 minutes.
5 or 10?
Five.
Okay.
Five.
You've got 5 minutes. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you to staff for all the work that you've done. My name is Dana Brown. I was first here probably 5 years ago asking for our original permit along with my father. And in this time, a few things have happened, and it probably brings up some questions as to what really has transpired. We were originally permitted for a winery and separate tasting facility. And unfortunately, my dad passed away. And so we're not able to complete the entire project. So now we have, and we've kind of worked with staff a little bit to possibly get a few exceptions, and that's the whole building of the agricultural building and then converting it into a tasting room. Just want you to know that came here and bought property because we were attracted to the soil. That's why we named our winery Calcaris. It refers to the soil and you know, the love of the land and the landscape. It's not a hobby. My father and I were both wine distributors, so we knew a lot about the wine business before we started this. And after selling our companies, decided we wanted to get involved into the production side. So we're looking at this as a business. I invite you all to come and look at our facility. We've been very mindful of maintaining the beautiful landscape. We haven't built any monuments. We don't intend to. The only reason we want to expand and be able to do some different events up there is to really bring attention to Paso Robles, the wine community, our area. We're doing a lot of things right, trying to do everything right. We've complied with you completely with everything that we did in our original permit. I think we planted over 100 trees and all kinds of things to even protect the smaller structures and the really unobtrusive structures that we did put up. We've been completely compliant in all of that and certainly plan to continue to do so. Incidentally, we're making great wine too. Our California Paso Robles Cabernet Sauvignon was voted the number one Cabernet in all of California. That's from the Sacramento, California State Fair, and they respond to any questions that you might have. And they might know more specifics on some things that I might not know 100% about. And so I just, if we could refer to them or to me with any questions, I sure would appreciate it.
Sure.
Okay? Thank you.
So, Damian Grindley, are you just here to answer questions at this point? You did fill out a speaker slip, so you're welcome to add anything.
Yes, Damian Grindley, Templeton. Yes, I'm just here to answer any questions available that Dana may not be able to answer in her own right.
Okay. And Jack West as well, are you just here to answer questions, Mr. West? Okay. He indicated in the affirmative. So anything else to add, Ms. Brown, before we...
That's all. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. So staff doesn't have a whole lot to respond to at this point, unless you'd like to add anything before the commission takes up a discussion of this.
No, we have nothing to add.
Okay, thank you. Who would like to start? I guess we'll go to the commissioner from the district.
Well, I can start. I'd start by making a motion to approve this because I think it's a wonderful thing that's going on out there. But I think there might want to be some discussion from fellow commissioners, so I'll probably more respond than make any statements. I don't know how big of an issue we're going to make out of the building of what's to be converted or what is the wine tasting facility. But my understanding was there was a building permit issued for that, and it did have a kitchen and the bathroom. So obviously the building department and the building inspectors were aware of what was being built out there. And I think this is a little bit of an unusual situation because the minor use permit allowed, from my understanding anyway, allowed what's there. But there was an extension was neglected to be applied for, and I believe that could have had something to do with the family tragedy. So
my understanding is it allowed the structures that were built, the original tasting room. That permit expired. That permit was never exercised.
Yes.
So after that permit expired, they came in for a new building permit to build the structure, but without the attendant use permit to allow the activities that were intended to take place in the structure. So that's really what we have before us. And I guess that it would be a question for the applicant as to why you chose to sort of build the building first and get permission to use it second. What was your thinking on that? And it's a relevant question because your original permit specifically prohibited special events. And it seems as though the structure that you have built, its essential purpose is to be used for special events. So we'd be curious to hear what your thought process was. Or you'd come up to the mic and fill us in.
It wasn't built for special events. We don't have a separate special events building.
It was ended. We wanted it to be a tasting room, and that's what it is. Hopefully, going forward to have a special event, it would have to interrupt my business. So I don't know how many special events that wouldn't include, the public for wine tasting I would even want to have. It's not a separate facility. It's the wine tasting room. If you look around, there are significant areas outside. We've had people there for Zen Festival, quite a few people, and we were able to handle that without any problems from our neighbors, any parking problems or anything like that. But it was under an agricultural building. Everybody knew that it was a tasting room, and that's what it was being built to be. And it's not like a tasting room facility with a separate room for events.
Okay.
That's
Could I just interject or interrupt? Because I guess that's the question. Mm-hmm. If we leave the events alone for now as a second part, that's what we're talking about here. And if we kind of widen the horizon a bit, our issue is we see this happening a lot, that people come in for an easy kind of permit for an ag accessory building, which we want to encourage if that's what agriculturalists need. We understand the necessity for that. But what we're seeing on a wide scale here is then people coming in and saying, well, we've already built this ag building, and now can't we just convert it to a tasting room? It's already there, ho, ho, ho. Mm-hmm. And so that's what we're seeing a lot of times. So here we have a building that everybody knew was going to be a tasting room. It's there, and our permit after the fact is a bit problematic. So I guess I'm trying to understand, maybe everyone else does, how this happened, that the building is there, and now should we approve it?
Feel free to weigh in, or staff can weigh in as well.
I mean, how is it in your perception that this happened, that we're approving the building after the building has been built?
This application came in, they came in with the building permit after the MUP expired. It was pretty much what the previous MUP had approved, and we had to turn them away as a tasting room. They requested that they would could build this building as an ag building. But we knew that it was to be proposed as a as a tasting room. They came in for the building permit. We insisted they come in for a minor use permit to turn that building into a tasting room. And it was at that time when it originally came in, and we granted that building permit.
Why was that considered a better course of action than just coming in for a new MUP? Why was that?
Because
then they had to come in for a permit, and then they still had to come in for a MUP. But it puts us in a sort of marginal situation at this point, because we're asking to approve uses for a structure that's already in place. Why was that considered
this to happen again giving this approval?
Yeah,
I completely understand and sympathize with your decision, feeling as if your hands are tied. The staff's point of view at that moment was that the impacts of this building has already been looked at. We weren't dealing with a minor use permit that included the special events at this time. At the moment of that decision, it was simply the building for the tasting. As this project evolved, the special events got added and increased, and it got more complicated and more layered. So we really anticipated having this minor use permit approved and done about the same time that they would be building be finishing up on that building. So we didn't anticipate this lag.
Would staff pursue this course of action again, given the same set of circumstances, do you think?
No.
I really don't want to encourage behavior that, we don't want to encourage choices and judgment that we don't really want to see repeated.
No, Bill Robeson, I'm from the planning department. I would have to agree with you. We wouldn't take this course of action again. In hindsight, 2020, we look back on it. It is problematic. I don't think we've done this before. I'm not sure. I wasn't really involved with the specifics of the decision to let this go forward. But I think we've all kind of looked at it and said that we'd rather have them go through their minor use permit again, get that approval, and then go ahead with their building permits after that.
So the concerns of the commission have been duly noted by staff. Okay.
Yes.
I think that's what we're looking for.
Elizabeth Cavanaugh, County Planning staff. This is a little bit different than some of the wineries that I'm hearing you kind of lump this in, where they truly do come in and say this is an ag building, and then once it's built they get it, and then they come in for the minor use permit to do a winery. Staff, we kind of saw this path laid out before us, and there wasn't any deceiving.
Yeah, I think it's really clear that there was no nefarious intent whatsoever on the part of the applicant. It was a pathway that was suggested by staff as maybe a better way to go, but now in hindsight, we're realizing maybe it wasn't such a great way to go, and we're probably not going to be doing it again. But it certainly was not. I don't think anyone meant to infer that there was any malicious intent on the part of the applicant. It's just, you can understand how we're sort of struggling with the structural decision that we're being asked to make at this point.
Well, and that's the difficulty, if it was blatant that this was the intended use, but the process wasn't followed from the beginning, then the applicant certainly isn't to blame for it, and so here we are.
Yeah.
Well, we do still have some ag-related questions that we need to discuss. I think I'm going to try to short hop this, though, and just see how our fellow commissioners are feeling about this. We've had planning staff basically make some condition amendments on at the request of the Ag Commissioner's office to scale down the parking. Parking is now scaled down to a size that it doesn't appear that it's going to be able to support the kind of events that are being requested in this application. Given that fact, combined with the fact that the initial approval for this project, which expired, specifically prohibited special events other than the industry-wide events, I'm wondering if it's not seeing a pretty clear and obvious path to the end point that if we go ahead and approve the minor use permit for the tasting room, that it's
ready even this year. But I am concerned about these really big events, and I just don't think you can park a 250-person event on 89 spaces without having people parking along Peach Canyon. Mm-hmm. Unless you require that everybody come forward to a car, which doesn't happen. So that's what I'm concerned about. I'm not really concerned about the fact that, I'm not concerned about the fact that we're talking about a minor use permit for something that's already been built. It is different to me that somebody had a minor use permit, it expired and wasn't renewed in time. That to me is just, it's not that critical, but I am concerned about the size of these events. So
what do you have a proposal there? I'm hearing let's approve it as is with all events. I'm hearing let's approve it with no events.
Well, it'd be good to hear from our other commissioners, and I don't know if the applicant has an idea about how many events, but there's what, 20? I guess where I'm at is, somewhere around an event or so a month of the really huge ones tends to be non-impactful, but that's just off the top of my head. It doesn't. I haven't studied this enough to come up with well-reasoned compromises.
The proposal for now is for 24 events, so 20 up to 125 people, and 4 up to 250 people. So based on the parking concerns, I would suggest we at least would eliminate those larger ones. Was that your thinking?
Yeah, based on the parking issues, that's where I'm kind of going.
That would leave up to 20 events with up to 125 people. That would be about one every other weekend, two per month, which I would suggest might be high side.
Do we have any thoughts or additions over here on my left?
My only concern is the 4 events of 250. That's the only concern I have.
Okay.
So we would agree that maybe we wouldn't want to approve those?
Well, I would like to follow up with staff. When we reduced from 40,000 square feet of overflow parking to 20, how many people would that allow for the larger scale events? Did y'all pick up on that question? Or?
Yes, I think so. And the intent was to accommodate just enough area for a 250-person event, assuming about 3 people per car. So using the paved area, there's parking alongside the road, but outside of where emergency access, if an emergency vehicle needed to come in. And there's paved area and unpaved area near the winery, in addition to the unpaved areas adjacent to the vineyard. So the intent of reducing that area is noting that they don't actually need 40,000 square feet of overflow area adjacent to the winery, but approximately 20,000 should accommodate those cars.
And when I was on site, and I see Mr. Grinley up at the podium, but it really helped me to go to the site because there's setbacks from the proposed road and existing ag road now to the planted vineyards, and it's for maintenance of the vineyard and for picking and pruning and all those things. So there are areas that could be utilized as parking for additional overflow that aren't part of the access road. And I don't know if I explained that very well, but being on site, it's obvious. And I know the large events, they sound scary. What the applicant expressed to me was that they almost need the 250 for their wine club, to promote their wine club. And then I looked at you know, I had a note anticipating this, of how, and my thoughts on it, and what I wrote down was an additional four events of 250, why not? Because we have four industry-wide events that are unlimited in number and unlimited in parking, so they could actually have 5,000 people out there if they could squeeze them on there during the wine festival and the other industry-wide events, the way I understand what's allowed. So to have four additional at 250 doesn't really bother me. And in addition to that, and that might be what Mr. Grimley's ready to speak to, is I was told that when they do have any types of events, they have, you know, parking attendants to help monitor the parking and where it's parked. But can we ask Mr. Grimley to speak?
He's here to answer questions, so if you have a question for him.
Mr. Grimley, would you like to speak to that, please?
Yes, certainly. Yes, I mean, Zinfandel Festival weekend is one of the allowed generic weekend events, and we did employ a parking service, and we have employed a parking service for every large industry event that goes on. One of the things that we've also trialed up there is we've had occasionally a tour group come through where a private group has hired a coach or a bus and brought that up. So I don't see the limit on that. When you start moving up towards 250-person events, it's necessarily all cars. A lot of that is a lot of the wineries, you'll see at the wineries, people come up in the coaches, the shuttles, and the limos and things. So it's not all necessarily.
Shows up at 6 o'clock. That's, you know, pick up your wine this weekend between these hours. And so you've got a lot of coming and going.
No, and generally it is actually like the Friday evening after work or something. You will say, you know, you can pick up your wine any time. But, you know, we're trying to encourage those people to come up and feel part of a club, feel part of a community, feel part of the landscape that we're in and the vineyard that we're there. And we will say, put on food or a band one night, you know, just a little quartet or something, just for them to come up and feel part of the community, feel part of the club. And then that is a specific time, not a generic any time you can pick it up. And that might be a Friday, you know, just after the doors close or something. So it does tend to be a group thing coming up.
But Mr. Grimley, pardon me, but isn't you know, your wine club and your industry-wide events already kind of allowed? I mean, that's part of the issue here, that there are already some sort of unknown number of industry-wide events automatically allowed. So you're already having your wine club members come without this extra permission to do more. So Commissioner White, I mean, the issue here is they're already allowed to have so many, really an unspecified number of industry-wide wine club events. They're not precluded from that. Now they're asking for more.
Well,
so I would argue that's a reason why we should allow fewer, more, not a reason why we should, you know, wave our hands and say they're already doing a bunch, then so what?
Well,
you know, why can't we just let them do a whole lot more? And we have ongoing issues of noise and traffic and, you know, neighbor rural issues. So that's not just a reason to allow more. You're already doing your wine club events, Mr. Grimley?
Correct. If that's the case, then that's fine. But still coming back to the original question, which was the talking about the four 250 events because of parking, but I didn't think we considered the bus issue and the trolleys and the limo issue as being part of that number.
Right.
And that
so
yeah.
I think we understand your point,
okay,
that there may be some additional allowances for number of people to number of spaces because of some shared transport, such as buses. But I also think we need to realize, as someone has pointed out, or we have many times, that three people to a car is a completely unrealistic number. So to use that for our parking calculations is really a stretch. It's just not going to happen.
Thank you, Mr. Grimley. We'll call you up if we have any other questions. Mr. Eisensee, I think this is a great segue for you to come to the podium for a moment. First off, I'd like to ask if the Ag Commissioner's Office, if you had any discussions or if you consider these sorts of pickup parties where people come and pick up their cases of wine that they've reserved, do you consider those to be special events?
Michael Eisensee with the Agriculture Department. No, I believe those are covered in the ordinance as being non-advertised events, which are obviously at the discretion with the original permit, but are allowed. They're not part of the count of special events.
It's sort of like we didn't allow any special events here. Those wine club events that Mr. Renly talked about would still be allowable.
Yeah. Certainly.
It's like a CSA where you come and pick up your box of vegetables from your farmer that's growing them for you. I see that as a very analogous situation.
Yes, I believe that's the case. I believe the distinguishing characteristic would be if they put an advertisement in the Tribune and said, we're having a pickup party for our members and anyone else who wants to come to hear the band and come to the party, you're welcome. Then it's an advertised event and then it would constitute a special event. But otherwise, it's part of their business.
So no inhibition there. Mr. Melskow, did you have something?
He just answered
it. Okay, very good. I think the question about the events, both the number and the size, really goes to the question of how this commission wants to interpret the phrase secondary and incidental. And we've heard from the Ag Commissioner's representative that they do it strictly on an area basis. You know, the production is this big, the special events are this big, therefore it's secondary and incidental. And I think that was probably a good place to start when the ordinance was first written and these issues were first discussed in the public sex realm. But I think that since then our thinking on this has gotten more informed, and perhaps our decision-making process might need to get a little bit more refined to reflect that new information. From my perspective, I look at it in terms of if what's being proposed, which at this point is 24 events a year, which is essentially every other weekend, more or less, every other weekend, a special event of somewhere between 125 to 200.
That's beside wineries, about the rest of agriculture and events on agricultural land generally, and how do we bring forward secondary and incidental. But we haven't said, oh, at some magic number, we're going to change course and say, wait a minute, we have 800 event sites out on ag land, and that's enough.
Because under the ordinance, under your interpretation and implementation of secondary and incidental under the ordinance, a person could have a 100-acre site with no vines on it, actually. You can have special events and tasting rooms with just a winery only. So you could import all of your, you have no grapes, import all your wine, make your wine there, and have events every weekend whose gross receipts vastly exceed the amount of wine that's being produced on site from grapes that aren't even grown there. And in that case, the events portion of the business plan would clearly not be secondary and incidental to the wine production, but based on just gross square footage, it would be. And I don't think that's the direction that we intended to go when we came up with this, with the framework of the ordinance. Is that a fair look in the rearview mirror?
I think that might be overall fair. I believe how we did do it, and it makes it maybe uncomfortable for everyone, is we said that it's relatively easy to get up to 6 special events with quite a small number, 80 people, through the minor use permit. And beyond that, we're going to look at each one on its own merits at the commission. And that's where we are today with any project that comes before you.
And what's your impression of the assumption that there's an unlimited number of 50 attendee events that are automatically assumed with any permit of this type? Do you agree with that interpretation as well?
Are you speaking to the question of if you get a winery permit, it automatically comes with the allowance for certain kinds of events?
That's the assumption that we've been making here, that you can have an unlimited number of events of up to 50 people at a time throughout the year.
I guess I think that that's clearly not a correct assumption, because all wineries require a discretionary permit. So discretion is applied and a decision is made based on the site characteristics. I believe we have had sites, either as minor use permits or as conditional use permits, where the public is specifically precluded. So, clearly it's within the discretion of the decision maker to say, based on this site or whatever rationale that's come up with, there isn't a good reason to have the public here.
Questions for Mr. Eisen?
I believe earlier, Mr. Eisen, you said that with a conditional permit, there were up to 40 events allowed over the...
The ordinance spells out that there's a maximum of 40. As I'm imagining you're aware, of course, most ordinance standards are always waivable, so that's sort of a limit, but people could ask for more.
And the applicant here is asking for 24, so I feel like we're well within the ordinance, and to restrict further, I just don't agree with it.
Okay, so we don't agree here, I think. So we're somewhere in between allowing these 24 proposed events, special events, and none. So I think two of us have expressed our none opinion, and one has expressed 24 opinions. So I think that leaves two other commissioners to weigh in. I've heard expression of none of the four up to 250 people on this side. And that would leave 20 up to 125 in the ballgame.
And the clarification that none actually means the industry-wide events, and it does not preclude things like the pickup parties or, you know, club winemaker dinners and those sorts of things. And the reason that I'm leaning in that direction is because, again, it's consistent with what the original minor use permit was approved for, which was industry-wide events, period. And the whole reason that this is before us is because we're being told that this building permit and now minor use application was essentially intended to pick up where the other one had fallen through the cracks through...
That's not how I understood it at all. The way I understood it was it's to do two things. It's to reinitiate that minor use permit, but as Elizabeth stated, it layered on to, and more things came forward to move it to a condition.
It grew.
It grew. Yes.
It will happen.
Mission creep.
And
I think
while we're going through, and it's in my mind, that's totally justifiable and understandable. When
with the current proposal, which is not a reinstitution of the reinstatement of the minor use permit, as you notice, it you know, the previous permit allowed a 3,200 square foot tasting room with no events, which was never built. And what we have instead now is a 2,900 square foot tasting room with an 1,850 square foot attached patio with 22,000 square feet of landscape for a total of 27,142 feet of developed area for non-agricultural production uses for tasting and events and other sorts of things. And I'm not comfortable that is going to support the kind of activities that I feel like are secondary and incidental to the production of wine. And so that's why I'm supportive of the wine club folks coming and picking up their wine. I'm supportive of this, you know, excellent winery and this wonderful product, promoting Paso Robles generally in terms of participating in the industry-wide events. You know, we've heard the owner of the winery saying that she doesn't even want to do special events that aren't connected with tasting anyway. So I don't see that that limiting the number and or size of the events is going to interfere with their business plan. And I'm concerned that allowing this level of events not only strays far from the original permit, but also starts to skate on the edge of not being secondary and incidental to the wine production. So that's where I'm coming from.
I just want to share all of those concerns well voiced, and especially with the peculiar nature of this after-the-fact permit here, that by allowing all of these, and we're basically giving the nod and the go-ahead. I do understand this is a slightly different circumstance, but if that's the case that we're making up for something in a death in the family, then I think we're obligated, if we want to go that route, to agree to the initial plan.
But then
if we're not, it's something else, and so...
It is something else, and I just don't think the applicant should be punished because they're incorporating two different requests in one request.
They're not being punished. They're making a request, and we're deciding whether or not...
Well, what I'm hearing is that because we're making these concessions because of the minor use permit expiring, now we're being asked to do more, where to me that appears that we're not willing to do as much because we're already doing that for them. So, and to me, those are two separate, completely separate issues. And again, if you go to page 3-9 of the staff report, the bottom of the page, the last couple of paragraphs outline how this does comply with Ag Policy 6. And I would ask Elizabeth to speak to that, if you would, please. There's a concern being with the events proposed here that it could potentially violate Ag Policy 6, and I think you pretty well summed it up here if you were the author of this.
Yeah, we did work when, as Mr. Eisensee of the Agricultural Department explained, when it first came in, staff and the Agricultural Department had concerns about how this project would be incidental to the winery and the vineyards and all that growing on site. As the project's been scaled down to meet the agricultural commissioner's opinion, staff also feels that it's incidental. One of the things that I just want to bring up on this is that this is a conditional use permit, and so the applicant has gone through a different process than the minor use permit. Although the steps are very similar, they are requesting the special events. It has been evaluated for the special events and the impacts created by those special events. So limiting it back to what was approved in the minor use permit is not giving the evaluation that was done for the conditional use permit and the level of permit that was required that the applicant has gone through doesn't take into consideration all the environmental impacts or the lack of environmental impacts and all the analysis that was done to come up with this recommendation that even though this is a lot of special events, there is no noise impact, there is no traffic impact. We looked at these because this is a separate permit than the previous minor use permit. When they layered on the special events, this became a conditional use permit. It was originally brought in as a minor use permit so that we could quickly approve it and give the use of the winery. As soon as they said special events, it popped it up to conditional use permit.
And on special events for wineries in Napa County. You build a winery in Napa County today, you get to have a winery, and you get to have tasting by events, or by special appointment only, and that's it. No weddings, no concerts, no corporate retreats, nothing. You get a winery, tasting by appointment, and that's it. And certainly Napa has not, and that change took place, I believe, in 1989, because they saw what was happening to their prime agricultural valley was that it was getting overwhelmed by the non-agricultural incidental events like weddings and parties and all those sorts of things. I don't think Napa has suffered in terms of their branding and global image as a wine destination place, I don't think people are unfamiliar with Napa because they can't go and have special events at the wineries. I think they've really guarded their reputation with that policy, and I just want to suggest that we might perhaps learn from the experience in Napa County and avoid making some of the same mistakes that they've already made and learned from and quite successfully dealt with, I might add. And this is the nut. This is the question. What is agriculture? And I guess that's all I have to say. I've said it all. That's all I have to say.
May I
speak of just shortly on affecting agriculture. I farm right across the street from the biggest event center in South County. They have two sites. They have the old historic house and a beautiful garden. Across the creek, they have a barn. Friday night, they can have two events, one in each location. Saturday afternoon, they can have two more. Sunday afternoon, they can have two more. There's six events in one weekend, and it doesn't affect our agriculture one bit. I can't see where there's been any effect, because they're on a road that's close to Thompson Avenue. There's no effect. And that could happen 52 weeks out of the year, which would be, 300 events in the year. Well, it doesn't happen that much in winter, but in summer, those two sites are busy. And agriculture, where I is, we are not affected.
But, Gene, I guess that maybe we're not going to solve this sort of philosophical difference here, but the issue is, as I see it, it's a longer-term issue where if the price of the land is bid up, because of the viability of this other business than agriculture on these sites, that other agriculturalists can't get into agriculture because of the land price. And you're fortunate to have more than a little bit of land right now, so you don't personally have to face that. But if you're a wannabe agriculturalist and you have to bid against someone who is looking at permission for an event center on a site, you're not going to be able to outbid them on cattle ranching or row crops, because that viability of that commercial activity is going to win out. So it's going to be the long-term kind of doom of agriculture that I guess I see the threat. Mm-hmm. I don't see it as the threat to you today or tomorrow, but it's, future days. And we're not going to get there here.
So I think we've had a robust discussion of this. I think we should probably start entertaining some motions.
I'd be happy to do that. I'm happy to see we're all in agreement here. So
with that,
I'll make a motion that we adopt negative declaration in accordance with the applicable provisions of the California Environmental Quality Act, Public Resources Code, Section 21,000, and approve the conditional use permit DRC 2007-00128. Based on the findings listed in Exhibit A and the conditions as modified listed in Exhibit B.
I'll second that.
And do we need to read through what the changes to those conditions were?
Public Works is ready for one of them, I know. I was asked to, on page 3-13, to modify condition 12, and I basically rewrote the whole thing because I had ample time, and I'll read into record what I have. Upon application for construction permits, the applicant shall submit a grading and drainage plan demonstrating that the secondary access road will be constructed to minimize drainage from entering Peachy Canyon Road. The secondary access road should be constructed with a constant cross slope, not a crown section, to allow drainage to sheet flow across the access road towards the downslope edge. The plan shall be jointly approved by CAL FIRE, the Department of Building and Planning and Building, and the Department of Public Works. And so basically I just minimized it from not directing water to minimizing water, and then kind of cleaned it up a little bit.
And then condition 6A was struck and proposed to be replaced by the language that staff read into the record earlier and has since handed out regarding parking for a total of 89.
Chairperson Christie.
No, that motion fails.
I could have spoken to the motion beforehand, but I'll speak into a little bit now, and then I'm not sure I'm going to make a motion. I seem to be the swing vote here, so I'm a little nervous.
Don't you love it?
No, I don't. Here's where I'm at. I actually agree with Commissioner Christie and Commissioner Wyatt on their philosophical approach to agriculture and where this county is probably going to be going with agriculture in terms of very interesting fact I learned recently. There were 50 wineries in San Luis Obispo County in the 2001 or something like that, and now there's 296 or something like that. So at some point, we are going to have to face some of the issues faced that Napa has already faced and dealt with. And that point is probably a lot sooner than most people think, and although perhaps our economic downturn right now is helping things out, I don't know. But So I agree with him philosophically, that statement you made philosophically, and that is the direction I would want to, as a citizen and as a planning commissioner, encourage our ag department and our planning department to explore, and our supervisors to explore. I'm not willing, though, at this point in my planning commission career, to basically make that the way I'm going to approach these kinds of applications. I am very cognizant of economic impacts of these kinds of decisions, and I'm very very cognizant of just the expectations that the ag people and winery people and the community as a whole have about changes. And this is a pretty drastic change, what we're talking about, a very different way of looking at wineries and at agriculture. And I think that is the direction we are very much need to go, but I'm not willing to do votes that affect individual applicants, that just very dramatically on that. So In this situation, I am concerned with the idea that there's a lot of events being asked for to be permitted that are could easily be non-agriculture related, like weddings and that kind of thing. But I'm basically concerned in terms of this project about the fact that there's events that are being asked for that are going to have that could have 250 people plus all the employees, and there's only 89 spaces. And I know that Commissioner White has said, oh, there's really more spaces, and we have possibilities of buses and everything. But I mean, that's why I asked staff the question. There's 89 spaces. And 89 spaces is not enough for 250 people plus employees. And so that's where my concern is. So I would like to find, if we could find three commissioners, possibly five, but maybe that's not possible, to find some level of events that are do not include the 250 event ones that they would support, a motion on. So that's where I'm at.
I respect your analysis there. And just very respectfully, one comment on that: we're not looking at approving a new winery. So it's not about the quantity of wineries that we have in our area. And I agree with you; could come a point where we're really going to look at scrutinizing approving any more. This is an existing facility that staff analysis has shown us can support these 24 events, and 40 are allowed under the current policy. So I don't feel like it's an overreach by any stretch, but...
I guess the analysis goes back to that secondary and incidental, too. Yeah. If every current existing winery, there were no more wineries ever approved, but if every current and existing winery asked for up to 40 events, we would not really be having wineries. We'd be having special event
land. And I agree. Absolutely.
And that's where I'm kind of wanting to start to slow down that process and slow down that expectation or that kind of planning and have people kind of back off and take a little bit of a look at that. And I guess that's what I would like to, my vote on this issue, this application today, to kind of convey is that's what I personally like to do is start slowing down and taking a look at the implications of allowing up to 40 events, special events, to every winery that wants to do it.
I would move that we make a compromise here, and 40 maximum allowed, 25 proposed, that we've agreed there are some impacts and they're high. I'd like to make a motion that we approve the project with 10 special events allowed at up to 125 people.
And I'll second that motion. And I'm assuming that your motion includes the amended conditions that were referenced in the previous motion.
And the neg deck.
So I'll second that motion. So it's been moved by Commissioner Wyatt and seconded by Commissioner Christie. Would anybody like to speak to the motion?
I would, yes, because from what I heard Commissioner Christensen saying, it was primarily the parking for the 250. So why can't we make this 20 events at 120?
Chairperson Christie?
Yes.
Commissioner Christensen?
No.
Commissioner Milskow?
No.
And Commissioner White?
No.
Well, you didn't want to be the swing.
I'll make a motion.
But you seem to have put yourself there again.
I have a question for the applicant, if I could, before I make the next motion. Thank you, Ms. Brown. we talked about compromise when I came out to visit. Is this a compromise that you'd be willing to live with, or is a 250 critical enough to you to, I mean, I don't know if it, I'm in my proper rights to ask if you would appeal this to the board.
You know, I'd be forced to, and here's the reason why. First of all, thank you for clarification, because I don't know that anyone knows that wine club people up there are not considered outside events, and there's so much gray area here. Our intent really is to find out what we can do and follow the rules, and I'm sorry to say that's contrary from a whole lot of people out here, and we put a lot of time and effort and expense in trying to do that. It's not that I don't want to have events, it's that my focus is on making wine. And I would love, and incidentally, we have 442 acres. We're only talking about a 100-acre parcel and another adjacent parcel. If I could afford to, I would love to plant as much of that as possible with grapes. But as I'm sure all of you know, that's a very, very expensive endeavor. And since this is a business and not a hobby for me, I have to look at revenue sources. Wine club events, while they might impact a lot of people, I've never made a nickel on any of them. In fact, they cost a lot of money because your pickup parties are free. They come up and, boy, they drink and eat. And, you know, it's not something that is a revenue source. What it does is guarantee our customer, and it makes them fall in love with the wine and the place and the people, so it holds a good customer, and especially in the economy that we have today, that is really, really, really important. The reason for asking for the number of events that we did and considering that there's up to 40 that you could ask for, we felt like we were being awfully realistic, is that to put this secondary access road in is very, very, very expensive. And to be able to try to recoup that in any kind of period that makes sense to my business model, the few events for the 250 are something that we would really like to request. The 125 are great. Making wine in the wine industry is the number one business for me. But we've put all this money into the facility and following all of your suggestions to make sure that we don't impair the natural landscape. We just need some source of revenue to help us with that a little bit so that we can grow, make more wine, and attract more people to the area. But we don't want to be in the event business. We just want to be able to stay in business.
Excuse me, Ms. Brown, you don't even need the secondary access road, do you, if you don't have the permit for these special events? Isn't that is a requirement of the events. That's not a requirement that you're trying to recoup with these events. Am I mistaken?
That's correct.
So if these events went away, you would have no need for the access road.
I would have no need for the access road, but I would also have no way to build the exposure of Paso Robles, my winery in Paso Robles, attracting people to it, and making a small amount of profit compared to the result in that making, hopefully, a profit someday in the actual wine business selling wine.
I guess that's the point, mm-hmm. though, and the philosophical difference mm-hmm. is if you have a cash flow issue, then and the choices have to be made. If we're talking about protecting agriculture, I would rather see you use the cash you have to plant the grapes rather than invest it in the access road for the event.
And and 27,000 square feet of developed space to support the
event. Events and not agriculture. So we have a direct issue here, not even a long-term one.
The space other than the tasting room, which I think we keep kind of going back and forth on the math with that and the exterior area. A lot of the exterior are requirements that we were required to do with a building. When you're talking about the parking or the road, it's a ranch road that was there when we bought the property 10 years ago. And the parking just goes along the side of it, and it's something that could never be used for agriculture.
But that's so, not really on point I'm for not, what Commissioner what
right. I'm not one of the ones. I think parking is the least of our concerns here. You have 100 acres, cars could go somewhere. Really, amongst the concerns, that's not high amongst mine. My issue is this is just one more project among many, And we're hearing that there's a cash flow issue and grapes can't be planted, legitimate agricultural use can't happen because of a cash flow issue. But we're hearing the cash will go in to widen this road for events.
And it's already gone into developing 27,000 feet.
If we try to make decisions on the assumption that everybody's being dishonest with us, I don't think we can.
Nobody's assuming that, but I disagree that the point of this is to take people at their word. I mean, if we're making purely land use based decisions, we should take the people out of it entirely and just look at the policies and the issues before us. I think Ms. Brown seems like a completely responsible, reputable, competent professional, and I don't do anything but take her at her word. But it's almost as if that is incidental. That is secondary and incidental to the policy question, which is that is before us today, which is how we should prioritize our uses of agricultural land for non-agricultural uses versus supportive non-agricultural uses versus purely agricultural uses.
And we've gone so far, but this sort of conflict is inherent in today in Ms. Brown's own testimony, where she said she wants to make wine and not do all this other stuff, but here the question before us is all this other stuff, the events.
Well,
and
large,
we allow it, and there's a profit in it, so of course
go
this direction.
I think the way Ms. Brown sees it, and I don't want to speak for her, I would ask her to speak further, but I think she sees it as all one operation, the growing of the grapes and the events and the wine. It's all one thing. It's not separated out to where, I'm going to be a wedding planner, and then I'm going to go over here and grow some grapes. It's all part of it's you have to take it in its whole for it to be successful. And I believe that's what she's trying to tell us here today, and I'll let her speak further to that.
Well, before we do that, I would just suggest that we've had two motions, both of which have failed on a 3-2 vote. It would appear that Commissioner Christensen seems to be holding the bulk of the cards here. So, Carlin, if you want to throw something out there.
You guys could change your vote. What is it?
Well, I mean, we've framed the issues, we've put the motions forward.
I'll make the same motion that's been made before, except I'll say not the four events, but 125 person events. Let's see if I get a second on that. Isn't it 125 people?
125
right.
Events.
20 events per year.
That's a portion of the request. That's without the four.
It's without the four, 250.
And that's why I asked the question of Ms. Brown if that's an appealable issue for her.
Well, she's.
Well, I don't have a second, so it doesn't matter. So there.
So that motion failed for lack of a second?
No, wait.
I think we're stuck.
Did that actually happen?
I think that's as far as we're going to get. So I'm going to go ahead and second that.
Okay.
Because I think that's all we're going to get, and we'll be here all night if we try to hammer it any further.
Thank you, Commissioner White. So it's been moved by Commissioner Christensen and seconded by Commissioner White to approve the project as previously amended and read into the record, but to limit the number of events to 20 events per year at 125 attendees per event. And I'm not even going to ask if anybody wants to speak to the motion. I think we've had enough motions.
Including the without four events for 250 people?
That's correct.
Right.
Limiting the special events to 20 events of 125 attendees per event. Would the clerk please call the roll?
Commissioner Christensen?
Yes.
Commissioner White?
Yes.
Commissioner Wyatt?
No.
Commissioner Mouskow?
Yes.
Chairperson Christie?
No. That motion is approved, and that was the final item on our agenda today because, as has been noted several times throughout the day, the Acceleron minor use permit was withdrawn late yesterday afternoon. So, at this point, I would entertain a motion to receive all written material into the record.
So moved.
Everyone in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. That motion is approved, and this meeting is adjourned. Thank you all.